This is HPR episode 2565 entitled HPR 2017 New Year's Eve Show Part 7. It is hosted by various Creative Commons works and is about 178 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is Part 7 of the 6th annual HPR New Year Show. This is the last one.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Amazing to see all this stuff that I was using in college just becoming affordable now. 3D printing and laser cutting and CNC and milling. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I just engraved some acrylic signs with my X-Carve the other day. Turned out pretty good.
What'd you put on them?
I was making some signs for clocks, so you know how you see newsrooms with a clock and a city name under them?
Yeah.
So basically a little sign. So I reverse cut the city name into a piece of acrylic, and then that gets mounted on standoffs. It looks like glass when you polish it.
Very nice.
I also painted the letters with black paint from the other side, so it looks like the black is inset into the acrylic.
Twenty-seven kilo ohms is not a standard value. Who'd have thought?
2.7
kilo ohms.
Yeah, 2.7K. That's normal.
No, 27K.
Yeah, that sounds unusual.
I'm going to hobby-hour.com/electronics/resistor calculator. Link in the show notes. But anyway, we continue on.
Well, that's a useful little schematic about the different colours, Ken.
Yeah, and the calculator is even better. Yes, folks, I am cheating. Thank you very much.
I didn't think there was anything called cheating these days. I thought it was research.
Is it?
Well, that's what I call it when I go on YouTube to look at a teardown video before I start mucking about with a new laptop that I want to strip down.
I always found that kind of strange in exams that, especially in engineering exams, that you would need to know the formulas and talk to any engineer and you go, and they would always refer to a manual because to just make sure that they get the formula correct.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't understand why. Just give me the book
and
look up the formulas.
Like yourself, Ken, I started off in engineering, and if we were starting to cut a thread, there was no way you'd start on the lathe without having a check with your thread meter and your book and everything and exactly what set up.
Absolutely, yeah. And better yet, ask somebody who's done it before.
Of course. So, yeah, it's always strange when you come to an exam and you're not allowed to do all that.
I don't know, asking questions. I see so many people afraid to ask questions in work. And, you know, what does it matter? You know, just everybody makes mistakes sometimes. Just ask a bloody question. I prefer you to be asking the question than me sitting there like a noonaw thinking you're doing something when you're just stood frozen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think these days people have lost, or they've got this fear of seeming stupid because they don't know what they're doing. But until you've done it the first time, you're never going to know what you're doing, are you?
Exactly. And that was the thing I used to do when I was interviewing people. I would continue on asking questions until I got to a point where you reached the limit of the knowledge. And then it wasn't that I was that concerned about where the limit of the knowledge was, because, you know, everybody has different things. It's just what do they do when they get to a point where they don't know a thing? And, you know, sometimes you come up with someone who is so experienced, but you give them a question that could only be related to if you were working in our factory or in our industry, which they weren't. And then, you know, they start bluffing you and you're okay, I don't want to be working with this person. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I used to like, just a good answer to that question is, well, I don't know, because that's industry specific, but I imagine that. And that's a perfectly valid.
Yeah. Or I don't know, but I might know a man who does.
Exactly.
Even if it's Mr. Google.
Mr. Google. You only need to be one Wikipedia search ahead of everybody else. I heard a rumor of a chap who put up a hotspot in a meeting once with consultants, and you know, had a squid proxy, and then was, as things were being mentioned by the consultancy company's manager or team, that the consultants were Googled or going to Wikipedia to find out what the term was. Very impressive, guys. Very impressive. Brown, brown, black, black, brown, which I'm reckoning without looking is 110, 100 ohm. Nope, 110 ohm.
Where are you putting 110 ohm?
Nowhere, because it's a 1K.
I was going to say, the lowest one I see is 220.
Well, this thing is measuring 1K. Hold on. How would I get 1K from that?
Is the last color brown or black?
Or it's red? Impossible to say.
I bet the brown is red.
No, they're all exactly the same color. Brown. There's three browns and two blacks. So it's either brown, brown, black, black, or black, or brown, black, black, brown, brown. Brown, black, black.
You know what you need is an LED light.
I do have one, sir, yes. The big magnifying glass. This has 1K. So brown, black, black, brown, brown. Okay, now the question is, do I have 1K here on this thing? Yeah, two of them, right there, just above the little handle thing.
So tell me this, Ken, if you have two resistors the same value, and you twist both their ends together in parallel, what happens to the resistance?
Divides by two.
Very good.
And thank you for publicly quizzing me in front of 14,000 people.
You gotta make sure you put them in the right direction, remember.
It doesn't matter, I still have you down as doing that BitScope thing. You can pretend to be inaccurate as much as you like. I know what you're trying to do. You're thinking if you give me wrong information here that I won't ask you to do the BitScope tutorial?
I personally can try.
My wife just says cool in the... I'm completely don't think it's cool, but I'm just going to humor you type thing.
No, of course not.
Long suffering.
Ken, has your good lady ever done a show?
Yes, she has. She's on every single show. She's the intro and outro girl.
Ah.
But she's also done several shows, and she is working on a series for HBR.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yes, it is, actually.
What? I heard the surprise in the background. She knows about this series, I say.
Yes, she does know about this series, because we've been working on this thing for the last two bloody years. It started as a request for a article. It was a roundtable request by Lost in Bronx, and then she said, all right, I'll write something about that, and then it turned into, all right, I'll write a little booklet about that, and then, right, this is going to be more a blog post, and then it's, then it's the first of a three-part book series. So the first book is already written.
Well, may I say that the lady certainly improves the audio quality.
She improves more than that, that's for sure. She improves the quality of my life.
The audio quality is only part of that that we're allowed to enjoy.
Yeah, she cooks good too. We have three kids and way past any other form of entertainment other than food.
Yes, but it would get cold on the flight over to Boston.
Yeah, no reason you can't jump over here. Ding dong. Red, red, black, black, brown. And the brown is way over, so I'm guessing it's red, red, black, black, which would be 220 ohms. Does that sound logical? Yep, 220 ohms. There's only one of them.
Another thing you can do is just look at all the resistor spots on your board and say, which one does this seem closest to?
You could do that.
And kind of figure out what it should be from that set.
But we have a 26-hour after show to fill up with interesting content. Got it. Top right-hand corner. Seems to be bridging the first pin of the... Yeah. It's going from the ground, is it? To the first pin of the monitor. Or the little LCD screen. Only four more to go, guys. No, you can talk about something else. There's no reason for me to be waiting on my resistor thing. This is just something I happen to be doing while the show is going on.
Yes, we were wondering about the availability of single women in Europe.
Well,
I presume the invitation to supper would have said, I know this young lady who would love to meet a dashing gentleman from Boston.
I could go there with the whole Amsterdam thing, but... There are plenty of available people here for every taste. So brown, gray, black, orange, brown. Which comes out at 180k. You want to measure that?
Brown, gray, what?
Brown, gray, black, orange, brown. Brown, gray, black, orange, brown. Comes in around 180k. Yep, and I see one there.
180 or 1.8?
180. I don't see a 1.8 on the board. I see a 180 down at the bottom plus to the terminal pins with the PWM logo.
And we interrupt the usual broadcasting for an announcement that we are coming up to, I believe, the last time zone. I'm not even sure where that is, but the American Samoa, we became the first few years back. I saw a little article about that. So can somebody take over and tell us where the last time zone actually is? Because I have no idea.
Well, it's so the next time zone to go in 48 seconds is Midway, and the last one is Baker Island, which is an hour from now. So all of you staying up for to be at the end of the HBR show, you have another hour of this torture.
Wait, when? Well, yeah, and there's another hour. Oh, I see, there's one door end. Okay, yeah.
So who else has a 3D printer? Not that I have, but...
3D. Well, I don't have one either, but they're not as cool as they once were, surely, because they're more sort of mainstream now, aren't they, anyway?
Things being not cool usually means they're cheaper, which usually means I start getting interested in them.
Well, yeah, I see your point. And Tony's flashing up a lot still, I see. Only a mistake with the client.
Yes, Tony probably is about to say lots of stuff and things. No, every time I mention that, I'll be caught in for a show.
You're always angling for shows, Ken.
Yep, that's me. We got 280 fresh slots just come available. In 1 hour's time, there'll be 280 free slots available for your audio pleasure. Not to mention the 280 that will be the year after that, and the 280.
Hi.
What was your favourite show of the year, guys? And you don't have to mention, you know, obviously it was the How to Modify an Ironing Board, but your second favourite show. You laugh, but as soon as I've done this board here, we're doing ironing with Ken. So yeah, be prepared.
I think my favourite show, and it is one of mine, but the only reason it's one of mine is because I was actually alive to do it. And it's the show that I did after I had my stroke.
Yes, that was a
about
really
surviving
good show.
My stroke.
That was a sobering show, I must say, having strokes in my own family. Yeah.
But there's so many good shows. It's really hard over a 12-month period to remember, you know, ones. You know, you'll get one that jumps out at you at a time, and then within a couple of weeks, there's another one that jumps out at you.
I've been liking the tabletop gaming D&D stuff.
Yeah, that is pretty new and interesting. I wasn't expecting that to be a whole series, actually. But I think the best show, it's probably a trick question, the best show is the one that solves the problem that you're working on at that particular point in time. Which is why we often get comments and shows that are 3-4 years old.
Yeah, because someone will go hunting around in the archive looking for a solution. A bit like you do on YouTube. I've just been watching a bit of the video of the actual tester. Looks quite nice little bit of kit, actually.
Yeah, it is, actually. I saw that there was some guys had ones that came with the three surface mount components soldered on. I would strongly advise that if you have not done any soldering at all. Because when you're building a PCB, you have to start with the smallest components and work your way up. So you, by definition, start with the most difficult one. So, yeah. I think you can also buy them pre-assembled as well.
Does anyone watch The Pirates, the bilge tank from Pam Mulroney?
No? Have you got a link?
Yeah, I can find you one. Give us a couple of seconds and I'll get you one. They have a regular weekly show during the where they obviously it's part of their sales team as well. It shows new things that they've got for sale, but occasionally they do tutorials on how to solder and, you know, assemble some of the kits that they do. So it's quite good.
Oh, nice.
I've got them favorited, so I'll go and find them. There we go. Oh, it just disappeared.
No, you got it.
No, it's still there.
I got rid of my one.
You got rid of yours, did you?
Anyone get a new cool kit this year? And yes, you know where this is going.
No, I didn't get anything for Christmas. But I went out to the auctioner a few weeks ago and picked up myself a nice little setting down i3 tower. That's a nice little bit of kit.
I like that auction thing that's going on beside you. I really am very jealous of that auction house.
Yeah, they were selling some SSDs, some 128 SanDisk Ultras. Managed to pick them up for £32 each.
Oh, nice.
They're about £50, £60 or something. So I got a few of them. But it's amazing how useful, you know, 4 and 5 year old kit still is these days.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like I say, a little i3 tower with, I've just stuck the SSD in it, and it's got, I think it's 4 gig of RAM. I might have upgraded. No, I think it's 4 gig of RAM, but it flies along. Absolutely flies along.
97K, is that a thing? Orange, black, brown.
I think you're a bit behind the video, Ken. He's got his attached to an oscilloscope.
Har, 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 har. In my defense, he did fast forward, so. By the time we've done truncated silence, everybody will be going, God, Ken is really horsing through that thing. I could do a Blue Peter on it and go, here's one I met earlier.
You could. Have you got another one pre-assembled?
Sometimes I wish I will. I may have to buy one pre-assembled if this doesn't work out. £100K turns out to be. Do you ever get any of these kits that were missing components?
What are you missing?
Did you ever get any kits that were missing components?
No, the stuff I build, you usually have to source your own parts.
Oh, okay.
I've got so many boxes of that stuff, I can find what I need, usually.
It's actually so cheap now, I got loads and loads of resistors and capacitors and stuff, which is actually why I want to put this together, because want to sort them out properly.
The bad thing is when you take stuff apart and you have extra stuff, that, you know, put it back together.
Yeah, but so long as it works, it doesn't matter. I learned that as an early age. So long as it continues to work, it doesn't matter how many spare parts you have. You just made it more efficient.
Yeah, that sounds like when you're pulling a laptop apart and you put it all back together and you've still got a handful of screws left.
And at that point, you take it and you shake it. And if it's fine, then you just made it more efficient. Now you got a lighter laptop. I mean, from mechanical engineering terms, that's something that you get used to. You know, it's like electronic engineers who don't, after a while, don't worry about the order of the resistors. Mechanical engineers very quickly get used to the, yeah, a few extra components, no big deal. An approach I would hope my surgeon doesn't have, by the way.
It's not so much the bits left over, it's the bits that they can't find afterwards when they've exactly sewn you up.
Oh, I like that surgeon who got caught for laser engraving his initials on people's livers.
Yeah, that was horrendous.
Well, one part of me was going, yes, that's horrendous. And on the other hand, I was thinking, if he had asked me beforehand, dude, can a laser cut your initials on your liver? I go, well, okay. Go for it.
That sounds cool. I think there's only you, Ken.
Well, I did ask.
Watch that series, Supernatural?
No. No.
Actually, the initials are fine. It's when he has to put the Creative Commons reference on there.
Oh, killed by free software. Sorry, what was that series?
Supernatural. It's a TV show. So it's these two brothers that go around chasing supernatural monsters. And, you know, in this universe, there's, you know, demons and angels and monsters and spells and all this stuff. And so they have certain symbols they put on stuff to keep the bad spirits out of this, that, or the other. Well, they have these tattoos that keep them from being possessed by certain things. And at one point in the series, that one of the angels basically tattoos on their bones whatever this symbol is that's supposed to keep them from being infected by something.
Mm-hmm.
And that just reminded me of that, of, you know, you're going to laser engrave something on your liver. Well, these guys had that in the series. Maybe that's where he got the idea.
Ah, possibly. And the last one should be 170 ohm, but it's 20k. How the hell? Okay, great. Measures 20k. But what we learned is Ken still hasn't a clue how this thing works. That is no way that is red. It looks violet. Red, black. This is why you just can't trust these color bands from these cheap resistors. They just have no... Like, this red is nowhere like that other red. It's pink. All right, fine, whatever. Measure of the... Soldering iron on. Don't all talk at once.
It's just fascinating listening to your concentration, Ken. It zombifies us all.
Indeed, yeah. I did get a new soldering iron, and that was a good move.
Is this the $25 one you were talking about on the review show?
How have you even heard that? That was only posted yesterday.
Yeah, so I listened to it last night, after it was posted.
Dear, oh dear, oh dear.
I just went on the web and listened to it.
It never ceases to surprise me that people listen to the community news shows.
I just want to listen to you slag us all off, you see, Ken, because we're not giving enough shares, that's what it is.
A form of masochism, then, is what you're saying.
Sometimes I'll, miss a bit of feedback or something on one of the shows, and I don't, like most people, I don't listen to every show, so sometimes just getting a little synopsis of some of the shows is quite good.
Yeah, exactly. It's a way, I think we're rebooting audio subsystem. I think we we're going to recommend it as the series to subscribe to if the 70, if the the rate of shows coming in are sometimes a little bit too much for some people.
Yeah, it's a bit like a monthly digest, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Monthly digest, that would be the word.
And then if through listening to that, you think, oh, I might go and actually listen to the full show on that one.
Have you ever done so?
I have, yes. Yeah, occasionally. I thought, oh, I missed a good one there. The title didn't really speak up to what it was about. Because sometimes the titles can be a bit dry, and I think, I'm not particularly interested in that. So I don't even bother downloading it. What do other folk think?
I've gone back and re-listened to stuff that I hear on the Synopsis show. Or remind me about it, and I'll go back and make a comment.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Sometimes you'll listen to a show and you think, I need to comment on that show. And then you just forget all about it. And then you get reminded about it when you listen to the review show at the beginning of each month.
Cool. I'm soldering now, just as by the way.
Ooh. Components getting fixed to the board.
Burnt beyond all recognition. I don't know if doing it through a magnifying glass is a good thing or a bad thing, because now all my solder joints look crap.
At least you've got solder joints.
Now that we're on Monday, I can say this obscene thing. Wire wrap.
Yes, do a show. For those that don't know what you're on about, first go back and listen to the Apollo Guidance Computer one, and then do a show. Can you still get wire wrap? Man, I'm regretting doing that. I'm going to try slightly thinner solder. Yeah, that's better.
Gentlemen, would any of you know what a standard image used to test image compression software was?
No, I don't.
It was a famous image scanned from a certain gentleman's magazine whose founder passed away just recently.
Oh yeah, this was on the Apollo thing. They used that. Yeah. Got a link to the show notes, or will that cause us our clean title?
I have actually seen that, or a similar image used at the AI lab when they were doing some stuff with the 8086 system.
Where was that again?
Tech Square MIT. Back when the 8086 was a hot chip.
You need to do a few shows on those, seriously.
What was the piece of software they were using for compression?
Well, while they were testing a new algorithm came by and they used this standard image.
Right.
Now, the fact that it was scanned and probably not registered with the original copyright holder might have been a problem. But then again, this was back in the last century and things were a lot looser then.
BBC have that picture of a girl. It was the daughter of the guy who was testing. He just went home and got his daughter and brought her in and then took a picture and then used that.
Is that the young lady that sat in the test card?
That's her, yeah. I was at the BBC training one time up in Woodlawn, I think. And they have the original there. Or had, at least. That was the best week of my life. It was one... If anyone ever gets a chance to do any training at their DBB training, it is absolute 1 week of pure technical porn. That's what it was. It was just... it was the best... the best slides were presented. The presenters were... If you ever wanted an example of how to put a thing together, it was... just absolutely awesome. Got a lot of cut little sticky out bits now. I need to get a new pair of snips. And my bill, this is costing me a lot of money, dude.
Actually, there was... The U.S. Air Force, Air Guard, actually Maine out of Bangor Brewer Airport, was flying F-101 Voodoos. I saw proof that the Air Guard, not Apollo, was the real moonshot.
Oh, wow.
There was a moonshot in the backseat of an F-101, which makes a phone booth seem like Buckingham Palace. I was in a truck that tailgated a jet fighter, so that's when I was merely a high school kid. More recently, about the turn of the century, I was behind a horse and cart. Pardon me, horse and carriage downtown Boston. Surprisingly, both of them were going about the same speed.
I'm making an absolute hames of this, but anyway.
You're just preparing it for the show on how to use solder work.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm lowering the bar on Ken can solder this crap, you can solder better. I'm going to be very shocked if this thing actually works when I'm finished, but...
When will that be? This time next year?
We shall see, ye of little faith. Truncate silence, I keep telling you, if you just shut up, then it wouldn't look so bad for me.
Whose idea was it to do it live on air?
This is the only time I get to work uninterrupted out in the back room once a year. This new soldering iron does actually make it a lot easier, especially with the small tips. It's really nice to work with.
So you're going to do a review of the soldering iron then?
I think Dave already did one. He has the same
one. Oh, does he?
I know what you're doing, you know. quite still finished, but anyway.
We're into the last half hour countdown.
Yes, the last half hour.
It's a race against time. Will Ken finish his component tester? And if this was a Tlatu's RPG game, it would be tune in tomorrow. Let's stop it right there, shall we?
One of these half an hour times, I mean half past times is at the end, it seems.
Yep. And spoiler, there's no way this is going to be finished in 25 minutes. Just...
No tell. Ken, you disappoint us all.
You're starting to sound like my wife again.
So well, come it, reminds on. Me, it reminds me of a good hacker friend of mine, Howard Gus Graydon. Haven't heard from him in years. He had about a dozen kids.
Three is enough for me, thank you very much.
I was going to say, that's a glutton for punishment.
Well, his wife was a little short thing. And one of his friends, English friends, said that small woman, large family, and Gus laughed. And Murphy laughed louder, I think. He was always teased about people, he should get a hobby or change it. Best mate I haven't seen in years.
My hand's starting to shake now. That's brilliant. Set me free, why don't you be? I think if anything, this board is going to be a perfect example of all the ways you can do solder incorrectly.
I'm just having a look at this link to the Supernatural that we were just talking about, that TV show. In a way, it looks like a revamp of Buffy.
There's a whole genre of that stuff. Besides, it follows the Hollywood formula. Something new and different with a good track record.
Yeah.
Correct. Is anyone else like me doesn't like all the reboots of some of the classic movies?
Like what?
Well, the John Wayne classic that they rebooted a couple of years ago. Can't think of the name of it now. But they seem to keep rehashing old classic movies and doing poor jobs on them.
Star Trek for a start.
No, I'd have to disagree with you there.
Nope, Star Trek, rebooting of Star Trek was bad. They completely missed the whole point of Gene Roddenberry's stories. They turned it into Star Wars when they did action, blah, 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 blah. Whereas Gene Roddenberry was all about the stories. It's the same thing with The Orville versus... Have you seen The Orville at all?
No, I haven't.
TV series, well worth watching, The Orville. That... is taking the stories and just doing them like stories. It's basically Star Trek The Next Generation without any mention of Star Trek.
So how does that work?
It works by going, well, they messed up Star Trek so much that here's another universe that is similar, but it is completely different.
Right.
But it's got good stories in it. It's like Star Trek. It is more Star Trek than Star Trek, actually.
So going away from Star Trek, what do you think of the reboot of Star Wars?
There was only ever one Star Wars movie, and that was the first one, and then everything else was a way to make money. I have yet to be dissuaded by that argument.
I must admit, the original classic is still an original classic.
Absolutely, everything else. And if you look at it from the point of view of merchandising, everything after that was just an opportunity to fill the screen with something and merchandise. Sorry, guys. Sorry, all the Star Wars people out there, but we all know it's true. Not that I have opinions on anything.
Nah.
I often thought it's a pity they never made a second Blade Runner. Or, yes, or a second Highlander. In my universe, there's only one Highlander and one Blade Runner. Although I haven't seen the second Blade Runner. And one Matrix, to be honest.
The problem with Blade Runner is that the director rehashed it so many times, I lost track on what was the original movie.
Yeah, it's hard to find it as well. You need to search for trailer or cinema theater edition. Thanks, Tlatu mentioned that at one point. Theater edition, and then you get it. Personally, I think it was always meant to have the 1940s. Yeah, this tall blonde walks past my window type dialogue, because if you look at the director's cut, there are suspicious delays as he talks back in conversation.
Mm. I just remembered the John Wayne movie I was thinking about, True Grit.
Oh, yeah. Did they rebuild that?
Oh, yeah. They redid that a few years ago. And I don't know why they bothered. Well, the original's just such a classic. I don't see why you want to bother remaking it apart from money, because that's all it's about.
Right there, yeah. I used to really enjoy going to the cinema, but since it's turned into a computer game, I think the best moment where I saw Pearl Harbor, and it followed the bomb down. At that moment, I realized, going to the movies now is just watching a computer game. And you can get better graphics by watching a computer game than... it just completely takes me out of the movie, the whole 3D rendering stuff.
Right, yeah.
If you can't... If your cinematic experience is... Oh, look, just go watch History Buffs, the YouTube channel. Yeah, that basically explains it. I do it far better than me. Yeah, pasting it in now. Yeah, basically for me, going to the cinema is about the story, and the CGI stuff just completely takes me out of it. And if you want to watch one where that's... have a watch of his review of the Napoleon movie, and you'll see what I mean. No, it's not Napoleon, it's called Waterloo, I think.
Right.
Is that joining? It's never a good thing to be asking, is it? Yeah, alcohol and a toothbrush, you say? More than that. And I'm still not finished. I'm so sorry, Mr. X. I have ruined this board. I've ordered one of those cheap microscopes, as if I haven't spent enough money on this thing already, but I will put in some photos of this in whenever, at some point. Oh God, this is brutal. There is particularly bad. Still, it looks nice enough from the front. What next? Cup of coffee?
I'm still supping my tea.
Yeah, I've got 5 minutes for a cup of coffee and then we can close this thing down.
Till this time next year.
Back in a bit.
Yep, this is coming towards an end. In about 8 minutes, I guess. Does everybody disappear now as well?
No, I'm still here, Sebastian.
Anyway, just Kenny disappeared. Anyway, I was wondering, yeah. Tony, I was wondering actually, Tony, who are you for real?
I'm not on these things that much. Tony Hughes, I've done a few shows over the last couple of years. I live in the northwest of the UK in a town called Blackpool. On the coast.
Oh, right, yeah. Oh, Blackpool. Have you been? And you've been to Dog Camp, haven't you, and stuff? I've been to Dog Camp.
Yeah.
Have you been to all of them more?
Yeah, for a few years I've worked with Les on the crew at Dog Camp.
Oh, you were on the crew, okay. Right. Tony?
Big guy with a beard.
I've probably seen you somewhere on there, but I don't know everybody at that thing anyway. Doesn't you got IRC names and you got Patreon names possibly, and you got real names, so a bit confusing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you come and you go to these things and then you get people going, hello Sebastian, I remember you from I got that Canterbury this year. I was like, well,
yeah,
hotel. I was like, well, I don't remember chatting to you, but okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been to Odd Camp for the last couple of events. Didn't make it to Canterbury this year.
No, but there's another one now as well, it seems. There's actually the Freenode event now as well.
All right, when's that going to be on?
Oh, you didn't know?
No.
Yeah, that was good. It's actually near me as well for a change. It's sort of very near me, my local city, you know, sort of having to go off to Canterbury or Brussels for Fosden, which I'll be doing again in a few weeks. But... you know, you'll always travel somewhere else usually for these things. And then Freenode Live popped up in Bristol this year. They've Crystal wants to do an events, or they've got some funding, I think, for this now as well, or what sponsorship or whatever. But yeah, so that'll be in Bristol again next year, but it'll crash with Bonfire Night Weekend.
Oh, right. Basically. Okay.
But that was actually quite good. It had people. You know, it has some. It was very vague to begin with. What would really happen? Because just talks didn't come up for ages, and the stands and all the rest of it. But then it got quite a few good speakers in there, like Karen Sandler and Deb Nicholson, and some. I think there a few other ones as well. I think there was a Debian developer, and there was. It says on the website, it got some quite good speakers. Stands was all right, but most people mostly going for the speeches like you do for these things.
Yeah.
Very nice Freenode. Well, the paid Freenode T-shirt, very 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 nice. The free one was not that good, but yeah. But yeah, that's something else with these conferences, isn't it? It's all about the T-shirt, isn't it? Because I've got so many of them now. I really do. I've been doing Brussels and, you know, since 2012 as well. And then every Odd Camp since 2012 once been on as well. And I bought a few online as well. But, you know, you get all these T-shirts, don't you?
Yeah. I've never made it to anything outside the UK. I've only ever made it to UK events.
I would say that Fosdem is worth going to, definitely. That's the biggest one in Europe. It's amazing. It's like out of this world for this kind of stuff, really. But obviously things like Hog Camp are much smaller.
Yeah.
And Freeno Live, but you know, like those events about 300 people at most. Something like Brussels, on the other hand, we're talking over 5,000 people every year.
Yeah, they reckon that's more like 8 to 12 now.
8 to 12,000 people.
Yeah, it's massive.
To go to Fosdem then?
It costs zero. You just walk in.
Oh right, okay. So that's why they don't even have tickets.
Yeah, you just walk in.
Wow.
But obviously you have to get there, which is going to cost you. You have to stay somewhere, which is going to cost you, and you know.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the most expensive free conference I've ever been to.
Why? Because all the t-shirts and stuff, or just staying, accommodation and stuff.
Yeah, there was a time when I fancied actually going over to America to one of the big Linux conferences over there, but I'm not sure I fancy going over there at the moment.
Well, I think something like LibrePlanet would be probably worth going to. That's a free software foundation event or whatever. But yeah, America's a little bit far from the UK, isn't it? And expensive to get to and so on.
Yeah.
For those of you following along, I'm putting in the transistors now, which is a case of reading them and putting them into the right slot.
You've got 2.5 minutes, Ken. You better crack on.
Yeah, if you could just shut up, then I could just, I'll edit in the, and I'm finished.
You should get over to Brussels, Tony, if you can make it, because, I mean, Fosdem is an experience that is definitely worth having when you're into this stuff. As I'm sure Ken would agree with me as well, because he's been.
Absolutely. It's
not going to happen this year.
Well, you want to plan it, but if you can get over, it is really just amazing to see life where the default is you're normal. And that doesn't happen too often.
It's basically, you hang out with technical people for the most part. They do have a saying that if you've got a wife or something like that and they're not into computers, what you can do as well is you can put them on the spouses and partners tool, because they've been running that for years as well, where they instead of going to the talks, they go around looking at Brussels and stuff with a tour guide, and it's free as well for that, I believe. So
that sounds cool. I don't know about the wife not being technical. I'm not technical half the time.
Although I'll tell you something, which is a little bit funny in a way. So when I went the very first time in 2012, I've never been to any of these open source conferences or anything like that. So I travelled abroad and stuff with my family, but not my own yet either. I mean, I've gone to Brussels on my own every year since, but I actually went with my older brother the first year.
30 seconds.
And to Fosdem, and I put him onto the spouses and partners tour because he's not going to want to go around the talks and stuff. But he after the first day, it was like, no, I'd rather go to talks. And I was like, really? Was it that bad? And he'd be working in the primary school at the same time as well, so lots of women.
Year show is officially over in 5 seconds ago, actually.
Yeah, I've got 12 seconds ago. Well, it was a hoot.
It was a more crazy stuff. And I'm going to continue on putting in this transistor. Because we don't adhere to arbitrary time zones here.
Well, we aren't having an after show?
Yep, this is the start of the after show.
I guess it is then. After show, whatever.
We're 42 seconds into the after show. The HBR New Year show is officially over, but we're still going 46 minutes in.
No idea.
You thought I'd stop, Tony. You thought I'd stop. You know, to listen to your shows, you'd think that you were a nice person.
Ah, well, that's just a front. Honest, Ken. Yeah, that's just a front.
Yep. I suffer from the same thing. People think I'm a nice guy. Okay, transistors in. Anyone got any tips on how not to kill transistors when you're soldering them?
Be careful.
Anyone got any useful suggestions?
Well, back in the dawn of time, there was this thing called a socket.
Yeah, I have a few of them coming up shortly.
I do believe that I've seen sockets for transistors as well. Actually, what's really weird is to see a thick film solid state device and realize that that's what your dad had for a tie-pin. Raytheon worked on thick film devices with IBM for a while one summer.
Okay. Solder is where now. I said it before, can you please do some of these shows? Because this type of show I would listen to for hours, yeah? Just reminiscing all about old hardware and stuff. So just start at your, when you first, about your dad, and then your entire career spending maybe a show per year. How about that?
So Ken.
Okay,
Ken,
I'll take that under advisement. I think I got some time open next December.
Touché, sir. Touché.
Well, you need the most important time to fill is actually the New Year's show, because I know I didn't fill it this year, so I'll have to.
That New Year's show does not count as a show. Everybody knows this. Except for my transistor build, yes. Yes, Leafy, go on ahead.
Wait a minute. Since I've been sitting here and listening to something or other, although then again, I'm coming from Linux Lug podcast, so if that counts as a show, this does.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that show, actually.
Well, my good boy, if you can, you know, we're available twice a month. You know, the directions are
wrong.
Wrong
time zone. Yeah, exactly. Middle of the night, unfortunately.
Come on.
Ken, so
we
when are you going to
start on time?
Ken, when are you going to put up the New Year show and also the after show? I'm wondering.
Well, I'm not putting up the New Year show at all. That's Honky stepped forward for that one. I will do if nobody else is going to do it, but yeah.
I pity whoever's got to edit all this.
Oh, yes.
good. Well, Happy New Year, folks. I think I'm going to step out and crash or do something
constructive.
Creative.
You could always make a PCB. We could do it together, like.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go, Ken. So good luck with the rest of the soldering.
Grand.
And...
hopefully we might bump into each other. I might go to Odd Camp if it's available this year.
Yeah, hopefully. Try and bump into you at Odd Camp. I'll bring my recorder anyway.
And Seb, enjoy Fosnem.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You're not going this time, are you? You're near.
No, sir. I am, but as you say, it's nearer doesn't actually mean cheaper always.
Well, it does probably on a bit, doesn't it? I mean, trains may be a little bit cheaper than going on a plane, for example, from Amsterdam, from Holland. But yeah, it's lots to do hotels and all that still.
So, final Happy New Year to all in Hacker Public Radio Land, and see you down the road sometime.
Well said, sir. Well said.
All the best. Bye.
Bye. See you, Tony. See you, Netminer.
That's pretty much the end, I guess, really.
Officially, yeah. I'll stick on here if anyone joins, then I'll be more than happy to chat.
But yeah, there should be Odd Camp Well, we assume so. After what they kind of say at the end of every year, isn't it? There's also a free node event now, which I don't know if you even knew about, but
yeah, I did. That's good. Yeah, I was considering going to that, but funds, alas, was it good?
Mate, what did you say a minute ago? I missed some of that.
Was it good over?
No, there was something else you said. What was that at the end? You said you're thinking of going to it, but something.
I was thinking funds, money, cash, financial strapped. No, not having enough financial resources to do it.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, this time I didn't really have a problem as such because it's in my nearby city for a change, you know? So that was great. Just get a bus down, get a bus back, stay in the place, you know? But because normally you have to go off to like Brussels,
yeah, exactly,
Canterbury,
yeah,
or Liverpool or, you know, somewhere else far away, yeah? But that's on next year, this year, I can say now. It's 2018. That'll be on this year as well.
And you
did? It's quite good. Bonfire night weekend. But I had like some good speakers there. I had Karen Sander, Deb Nicholson, it's all on the website really, but some Debian guy, I believe. There were the stand, got people like Popey there as well doing the Ubuntu stand, but I was doing one for the lug.
Ubuntu had a stand?
We had a stand as well in our Linux user group because we are the local, well, I insisted on that, that we should probably have a stand. So did a little speech thing as well.
It'd be a bit embarrassing otherwise, wouldn't it, on your own turf?
Yeah, exactly. We're meant to be the Linux user group, so it was like, we should probably have a stand there, really. So I got two people to help us, although it was a little bit disappointing running stands there because at least when we were there, to be fair, none of us were there 100% of the time, but it wasn't like FOS then where, you know, people really do influx and go all over the stands and stands. Here it's like they come around the stands a bit, but they really are there for talks most of the time, and it showed everywhere. So I suppose how it goes with these smaller events, doesn't it? Sort of odd camp number,
yeah,
I think about 300 people or whatever. But yeah, it was a shame it went like that in a way. But it was good to do that. And it was very nice that it was actually in Bristol for a change instead of going off somewhere else, like I just said.
Sorry the delays in between soldering as we go. So no, that's cool. But you always realize that even if it's a small thing and, you know, there's not that much traffic, you still can have that impact for your project, you know? So always a good thing.
Yeah, the other thing is, I mean, Bristol generally is quite a nice city in England. It's, you know, it's got nightlife, it's got tourist attractions, it's got...
My sister-in-law. Is it?
You got a sister? Okay, well, yeah. Have you been to Bristol? Have you yourself?
No, it happens, but she lives there with her kids and stuff, so.
But yeah, it's quite a nice city. It's quite safe and all the rest of it, generally speaking, for the most part. Although some parts are slightly a bit more run down and all this, you know, more homeless people and so on, all that kind of stuff. And I took somebody to a that I know online for a few years. I took him up to a vegan cafe up there, and he got a little bit scared up there because of, you know, you really see the change of area and stuff. And what was interesting later on is how I hear about these Americans who had come over from, you know, various places in America, and how they were just talking how safe it was, how they'd been down all the dodgy alleys late at night, it sounded like, and obviously nothing had happened. And, you know, that really shows a difference. And some of them were saying how, like, one guy, it was his first time outside of America as well, and he was like, oh, Bristol is... Oh, and Bristol is so, it seems so amazing compared to where I've come from, sort of thing. It's so safe, it's so this, it's so that. And he was like, oh, he's so lucky to kind of live around here. But I thought it was very interesting because it really showed a difference. It just showed a difference, and that was great as well, I thought.
Yeah, but you have to remember that America is a massive big place, and what goes in one place does not necessarily go in the other. I mean, I've been to places in the States where everybody's door is open and they know everybody in the neighborhood, and, you know, small towns.
Well, yeah. But this guy had come from places where they, you know, they've gun have a gun issue and so on. Really, also, it sounds like, you know, one of those places.
Again, they would argue there's no such thing as a gun issue. Anyway, enough about guns. I'm sure that's been covered in detail on the while I was asleep. I'm now putting in the ceramic capacitors for those of you following along.
Cool. Yeah, they probably talked about that over. Yeah, but I was just saying in general a bit. But yeah.
Oh, and do you know where Oddcamp's going to be?
I have no idea. However, I expect it's going to be somewhere in England. That doesn't really tell us much.
That's a bit of a giveaway, all right.
It's not going to be up in Scotland, very unlikely. And it's probably not going to end up in Wales, although somewhere like Cardiff, I think you could put an old camp, to be honest. It's not too bad. But it's going to be in England, I would have thought. And hopefully a bit more south, so it's nearer to me. But that depends a little bit, even with the south, because of how it's done. Southwest, Bristol, and then Canterbury is still a good 4 hours away, that southeast.
Tony was mentioning northeast.
Oh, northeast could be. That's where he said he was from, wasn't it, though? Blackpool, he said. Blackpool's quite far for most people, I think.
Everything's relative, sir. If you're from Blackpool, I guess it's very close.
Plus, the trains are going up again. That's what I heard.
It is amazing how relaxing doing this board is. It reminds me of. Have you ever put a Lego set together?
Wait, doing what board did you say? Yeah, I've done Lego, but that's been a long time.
I've been putting a kit together, a electronics tester kit, as recommended by NY Bill on one of the shows, and he challenged me to do one of these kits, so I bought it and I have been now assembling it for the last near on 3 hours. seems longer than that. Started yesterday afternoon. But it is quite relaxing.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
Do you ever remember the feeling that you get while doing it is similar to putting a Lego kit together, something like that?
Not so much, because I was a kid last time I did Lego, but you can't remember back. Get what you're saying.
You have no memory of being young. You poor thing.
I do.
You go down and buy a Lego kit or an Airfix kit and put it together. Relive your youth.
Yeah, but... Well, I'm not that old, really.
You could be doing that in between the talks at the stands. And you can say, why are we doing this? Ah, I'm glad you asked. It's all to do with electronics. But you're putting a Lego kit together. Ah, that's what you think. I'm practicing for electronics. Okay, I officially lost it there. Thank you.
There was a big thing. There was a big travel suitcase, sort of, I remember from in 1990 when I was a kid, you know, that would have lots and lots of old Lego in it, lots of old Lego pieces, and there would be like a playroom or sort of thing, and my brother and my older brother and me would sometimes go in there and play with Lego. So yeah, I do have a bit of a memory of Lego. Have you seen the Lego movie or something like that whilst on the subject of Lego? I've never seen it. but there was stuff like that more recently as well.
Have you ever done Airfix kits, stuff like that? You know, airplanes, sticking them together from plastic bits and gluing them together?
Not really. I'm not really that hardware. Well, that's not really hardware, but you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Stuff. I usually ended up with a big pile of glued plastic at the end. But still, it's enjoyable to do. The results may not be perfect, but still enjoyable to do. That said, I did live in the middle of nowhere, so entertainment was was very restricted.
Yeah, I mean, it's all changed. Well, now entertainment is basically electronic devices. I'm talking people in general here. You know, the books get read, but you know, it's mostly phones and stuff now. That's how people entertain themselves, on TV and game consoles. And it shows how things have changed over the years a bit. The whole Action Man or all these toys that people used to play with, it's not really played with as much in general. I mean, the shops still sell toys, but it's kind of gone out a bit.
It depends. Never really played with Action Man. It was a bit after my time. Why have I so many leftover capacitors? that's a question. There's no, found them. Don't panic, everyone. Don't panic.
No, I didn't play with an action man either, but you know, there was stuff like that. And I was thinking of it, and obviously there's still Barbie around for the girls and that, but
and the boys.
Yeah, you got a Barbie doll, haven't you, Ken, that you play with?
Yeah, the kid don't see it. I don't personally see a lot of difference other than marketing between an action figure and a Barbie doll. You know, if you take Ken apart, strip him down, and take Action Man apart and strip him down, what basically are you left with? Marketing and gender stereotyping.
Well, to an extent, but yeah, it's true.
It's an action figure, not a doll!
Gender stereotype and all that's all part of it.
That said, when my son did dress up as a fairy when he was younger, I was concerned about that he would be picked on and teased, but to be honest, not really. He was cool. A fairy with a sword seems absolutely fine to me. So, have I put these in wrong? No, 104, 104, and there's one left, 102. Yep, cool. Tip to everybody following along, I should have probably done the capacitors, the ceramic capacitors first, as they're a bit smaller than the transistors, but you live and learn.
Anyway, yes, gender stereotyping, gender, bit of a different subject, but I mean, yeah, a lot of stuff is based on gender with clothing as well, and just in general, if that's how it should be or not, that's their own debate, because people are people at the end of the day, aren't they? But a lot of it, society is gender this, gender that.
I saw a thing here, I don't know if it was in the Dutch news, where they went round and priced a haircut for men was cheaper than the equivalent haircut for women, and shampoo bottles with exactly the same ingredients were priced, that there was a price difference based on gender. But yeah, I guess that's just marketing, people will pay. But we'll get political now shortly. But on this network there are only two types of people. Well, I should have said 1-0 types of people, but it doesn't really work in audio. Hackers and those who have, people who've done a show and people who have yet to do a show.
Do you
I will now be pausing a little bit while I'm soldering. So,
do you know why I go into what you just said, or I don't really care?
Don't tell me you haven't done a show after all these years, Seb.
I only came on the New Year's show a few years back because it was popped up. No, actually, it was Thistleweb, Bill Gordon, who mentioned it somewhere, and I thought, that might be, let's see what that's about. And then it was like,
you're part of the HBR New Year tradition now. We can't go on without you.
Well, it doesn't mean I've done the show, though.
Noticed that. Nudge, nudge, hint, hint. And I've also already told you, I think, even in person. Have we met in person? I'm not sure.
I don't think we have, actually.
I think we did, because I was at the... We've definitely passed each other, because I've been at FOSTEM, and I've been interviewing on stands where you've been.
You might have passed me or something. I know you, like, interviewed on the Magia stand, but that wasn't me, as an example.
No, I would have known if it was you, in fairness. I would have known if it was you, in fairness. But yes, you could do a show on Magia, I've often thought. I've even told you before.
Interested.
If somebody can... Well, here, look. We're now having a show about me filling in resistors on a PCB that nobody can see. Seriously. People will listen to anything.
I'm not really interested in Majera as much as I was a few years back.
Why, what's up? Can you say?
Technical or personal?
That should be enough.
Probably personal to an extent. Well, yeah, probably more personal, really. Plus, I feel that it doesn't... there's lots of distros, and this one, great, it carries on the whole Magic Mandriva legacy, and it's all volunteer project, democratic, voting on who's leader teams, and all the rest of it. But at the same time, I personally feel that it doesn't actually innovate in certain ways. It doesn't really innovate. It's just one of those distros that takes upstream for the most part. Rebrands it, puts in some changes, and keeps its old tools alive. Some of them need updating, like the installer could really do with an update. I mean, The one that really gets me in the installer as an example, it's only a little thing to be fair, but it does show that it's old software that could do with an update actually, because even now, all these years later, it still mentions Yugoslavia. That's just one example, but it just, there's only a few people actually can actually work on the installer. I think there aren't that many actual developers who have the technical knowledge to actually work on the installer properly, from what I remember. But yeah, so it's just, I mean, it releases and it comes out with new versions, and I've got a laptop I'm trying to set up again because I've got it back with a new motherboard and hard disk and that. I was going to put Ubuntu on it and I had a problem installing 16.04 and that. Then I was going to put Mojave 5 onto it as well. But to be honest, I'm also mostly using mobile phones now or tablets or possibly mini PCs, or I will be once I've got that GPD pocket properly set up with Linux as well.
Okay, so all of those are very good shows as well, you know.
So the desktop and the laptop, it's like I don't really need one personally for what I'm doing most of the time, because I'm not actually working in tech as well. So, you know, I do email, I do music, I do...
Or what do you work at?
I'm not actually working at the moment as well, but that's thing.
Okay. I'm going to call it a night, guys. Have a new year, and Ken, I'll think about doing a BitScope bit.
Trillo, it was, thank you very much for all the help. It was genuinely helpful there, even though you were thrown.
You're very welcome.
Do have a think about that, because it would be a nice one. You got your Arduino, because we can put the code up, and then people can follow along. Because I remember when I did my engineering degree that we were showed oscilloscopes, and really it just went over my head. I had no context at the time for what I was doing. Yes, I was able to do the exam and stuff, but I didn't really understand why I was doing it. Yep.
Right.
Cool.
All right. Have a good night. Talk to you later. Right.
Live long and prosper.
Okay, night. Happy New Year.
Dang, the whole Happy New Year. Forgot about that.
Also, the other thing, actually, we're talking about working or... Well, I'll talk Linux, open source, this kind of stuff. What I've noticed as well is that, quite simply, if you want to actually work with Linux or open source, and I'm talking about something good with it as well, it's going to give you a good wage, and, you know, I think, generally speaking, you have to be quite technical. You have to, not necessarily a computer science degree, but, you know, you've got to really know technical stuff, and then... Oh yeah, there's stuff you can do. Because every now and again on the Linux user group, for example, I've seen it in the last, you know, few years when I've been on there, every now and again the emails come along and it's like, hey, there's a job going in this company in Bristol, and it's going to give you all this money per year, but you need to know this and that. And I look at those every now and again and I think, yes. In a different life, I would have done that possibly, or I could have been able to have done that, because I would have gone to university and I would have had my computer science degree and I would have done this and that. But, you know, that didn't happen. So I don't end up doing that, basically.
Well, can I stop you there? Because as somebody who has employed people and occasionally is asked to recommend people, there is one thing that every employer is looking for, and I'm talking about the engineers here, and the EEV blog did a very good way back a few years ago topic on this. It is not about how many degrees you have. Yes, you'll need that in order to get into the past the HR department and all the rest. It's not about what you can do. It's about your enthusiasm and your ability to learn. These are the two things that will always make you an outstanding candidate. And I would always recommend somebody, yes, this person has got, and there have been cases where we have hired people where somebody has got a master's degree in a thing and we have hired the less qualified person or the person without a degree but has some experience, and it's all come down to enthusiasm at the end of the day. And if you're not working in a company that appreciates enthusiasm in their employees, you don't really want to be working there either.
That's all I got to say about that.
I mean, to some extent, that's true actually with tech as well, that you may not actually have that computer science degree or whatever it is, but you may have actually self-taught yourself at home a lot, and then you can be like, look, I actually did this website, or I worked on this project, I did this,
absolutely,
I did that,
yeah.
And you can kind of show that you've done that.
Or equivalent means when they say blah, blah, blah degree or equivalent. And a lot of the times, if you go in and you apply to the job and you say, look, I'd love to do an interview. I understand I'm not qualified for it, but I really appreciate just having a look around your place, having a talk with you, and maybe there's work experience that to be had, or maybe there's whatever. You can definitely get your foot in the door. People are, because it is so much easier to help somebody out, no matter how slow they are at learning, it is just so much easier to help somebody out who's willing to learn. God, it's, yeah, you have no idea.
Possibly. Also, did somebody else just turn up, or did I imagine that?
Did I see Clacky? So far we got C Prompt, Honky Magoo, Mr. Jackson, Nerd, Armacuddy, Operator, there, Ross, you, and Steambot. And me, of course. Everybody except I think everybody is muted except us, except for the bots.
Well, let's see, the Americans who are usually on here, well, they, you know, they've had their New Year now, so they are either, some of them are probably very drunk right now at, you know, the early hours in the morning, or they have possibly collapsed somewhere and got some sleep, and that's probably basically it, and that's why they're not on at the moment. I mean, although actually it's not that early, is it? 7 something in New York, yeah? But for these people.
Yeah. But all depends on whether they've got a day off and whether they're going to... Oh, I wonder, is the HBR New Year show going to start?
I remember how one year I kept it going for good. Was it 16 hours afterwards? Remember that?
Yeah, I was very impressed with that.
And it was mostly me as well, because then I disappeared and somebody popped on. Then we did it again. Then they carried on. Then I went to sleep as well. And then I think it went on a good 3 hours or something after that as well.
Well, I'm going to keep it going until I have this transistor tester put together, and then I'm going to stop. Well, I'm going to be less involved. And right now I have all the surface mount components in, all the resistors in, all the transistors in, and all the ceramic capacitors. And I think I'll do the electrolytic capacitors, which are polarized. So we got to be careful about that. Haha. Yes.
Anyway, you said you were impressed that it kept going for so long. You were genuinely impressed with that, were you?
Yes.
Well, because it actually has carried on for so long, suddenly.
I always like to... The New Year show is slightly different to your regular HBR thing. And I was... In the beginning, I was a little bit... thinking it's a, quote, waste of shows, unquote. But it doesn't. It actually builds community. So that's... Kevin pointed out that. So, yeah. It's a different beast, and once my brain was able to accept that, then I... And also the fact that I'm not actually responsible for posting it or shouting it. And we had a thing where it would be posted immediately afterwards, but people don't seem to mind if it comes out in April or February or whenever. So, yeah. Chill out, man. Chillax.
I do actually think that it should come out as soon as possible, personally, afterwards, generally speaking.
Then I strongly recommend I will send you the files and you can edit it. And especially,
I'm not editing it, but yeah, I know. There's
especially
a lot of
the show notes. So they who put up, shut up.
I know there's like a lot of editing and show notes and stuff to do as well, so it's not quite as simple as just putting out straight away. But
no, it is not. Yeah. There's a lot of work involved in it, and I'm so glad that Hunky has agreed to do it, or if he hasn't, I mean, we will do it. But I tend to be a little bit more brutal, that I'll just split the whole thing up 4 hours in and forget about it.
I mean, the show notes, is that you just throw and put more stuff in the show notes and then release it, yeah.
Well, this year the show notes have been brilliant, I think, down to Casper from the Alien Brothers podcast, I think, has done a lot of show notes. So that makes it a lot easier and a lot nicer.
Yeah, this Casper who's been on, he's been brilliant as well, because he's been putting music into the show at times as well.
Yes.
Which was actually quite nice with his guitar and stuff.
Well, he's an illegal alien, as you know. He and his alien brother are from not of this world.
He's not on. I notice he's not on this thing anymore. But oh well, not even in here. In the.
So the long lead of the capacitor is a positive.
But I didn't hear some of his stuff. But I believe he did a Ken song or something like that. Well, I'm sure you'll hear it later on.
Oh
when
God!
When you listen through. He did like a, this is what happened when Ken is not his song, if I remember correctly now.
I think Ken could be a soundboard, you know. Just, oh, you owe me a show. Why don't you do a show about that? Oh, I didn't hear you doing a show about that. I very nearly put my capacitor in the wrong way around there. That's because you're distracting me. I hear the BBC are going to lock up their website without that you can't get in without a postcode or without a license number.
Well, I did not hear that, but...
on really? iPlayer, yeah.
But, well, oh, the iPlayer, not the news website, just the iPlayer.
No, just the iPlayer.
Well, the whole, you know, the UK's got the TV license, which is basically to fund the BBC, so, yeah.
Yeah, it seems reasonable, but unfortunately, there's no option to pay for that license outside of the country. That would be nice.
Well, true, but there are ways around that outside to be outside the country and still get it on. You're not really meant to do that, but, you know.
Well, on the other hand, a lot of cable networks carry the BBC, so, you know, you could say, oh, well, you're not meant to do that, but Norwegian TV make a conscious effort to make everything that they produce. They release it under a Creative Commons license with the idea that they're spreading Norwegian culture. So, you know, you could argue that as a service to the British Empire or the British people, that you would release the British programs to the masses.
Well, I didn't know about the Norwegian thing. That's interesting. However, BBC has, well, it's got, you know, shows like Doctor Who that I never really go into that, but it's meant to be really popular.
And just because it's popular doesn't mean it can't be free. I'm playing devil's advocate here slightly, but yeah.
And Top Gear used to be really popular and things like that as well. But it's about money as well. And
did you follow Top Gear?
Not really. I mean, I watched some episodes here and there. I never got into that properly. Watched the comeback series for a bit as well.
They're on Amazon. Has many people moved to Amazon to watch it?
I assume that quite a few people probably did go and get Amazon to watch it, actually. But now all these other shows as well. So, you know, there's so much TV in the UK you can watch on TV and so on these things.
True. Of course, if you had a satellite dish and were living somewhere that could pick up the signals, they're all unencrypted, free to air. So there you go. But that would probably be breaking the law or something.
Well, yeah, so I moved into this flat and had to obviously sort the TV license stuff out. But yeah, I mean, the satellite dish will just pick up whatever anyway. But they know if you're not watching it, or apparently you're not watching it with TV license.
Yeah, basically, I think they dump a database of every house in the country and then subtract people who pay their license from that and then work with their way from there. Because there's no way to tell now if you're watching TV or not. Back in the day, you would be able to pick up the signal, the frequencies of the CRT. I was asking somebody in work to do a show about that, but he ran away screaming. Okay, what's next? I think the crystal. The crystal. I will put in the crystal. My wife's looking at me funny.
Your wife come on earlier, or for a bit? Or was that just in the background? I thought I heard.
Nah, she's just in the background teasing me, slagging me off. What do you want? I've already.
You should get your wife to come on to the show at some stage.
She will be on at some stage, and you will be sick and tired of hearing her when this project goes. Yes, dear. Whenever we get it finished.
And you can bring your kids on this year as well. It seems, or maybe you did, and I missed that.
No, they haven't been on, guys. Yeah, they're busy playing something. We'll see if they can come on. Believe me, we've got lots of time because I've got this. I'm nowhere near finished this. So you don't have to stay on. I will just continue waffling here, and then it'll seem like I'm...
No. I'm a bit bored anyway, so I will stay on for a while.
Oh, thank you very much.
No, I meant I'm not doing anything as such today. There's no plans as such.
Ah, good. I should have actually put in this crystal first because it's a lot lower down than the component that's next to it. And its pins are a little bit bent. So we shall see. And also, the guy mentioned when he was doing the video that you should really have the crystals up a bit because the tin case can short with the pads. And so we'll see how we go here. Okay, pads are straightened and I now need some sort of tweezers. Yes, I have to buy tweezers as well, of course, because... Yeah.
I thought I had to buy another headset, maybe, but then...
yes, I think you do.
Well, maybe I do. I don't know. How good is this coming out or not at the moment?
No, it's actually fine. It was brutal earlier on when you had the back feed was coming in. But you got that sort
of... Yeah, because there was no headphones in. Yeah. But I was going...
Fine. These are fine.
Yeah, but, well, I was going to... I thought, okay, HPR show, I want to use probably my laptop again. I want to set my Linux up on that laptop beforehand as well, because I don't want to be sitting there in Windows again. Oh, no, because I did that before. I remember doing that. I was sort of doing my laptop. And it was like, hang on, I moved to a new flat. Have I got my headsets? And I thought this like a month or so ago, you know, I was like, have I got my headset? So I looked around for a headset, of course, like you do, and it's like, I think it's actually at the other house, I don't have it here. So like, right, I guess I'm gonna have to check the other day around Christmas time, you know, for that. And I was like, right, I'm gonna have to buy a new headset, I guess. I was like, right, I can buy one off Argos and have it delivered down the road to the Argos down there. That's what I was gonna do. But then I was going to go to Asda anyway, get food and so on, you know, and I thought, like, oh, actually, I could probably buy one in Asda.
Asda's like a supermarket, yeah.
Oh, you don't have them in Ireland, do you?
Well, I know what an Asda is, because
But
there are people from the States who wouldn't know what an Asda is.
Well, no, but they know what Walmart is, and it's like the equivalent of Walmart, basically, but in the UK. It's called Asda in the UK. It's not Walmart, but it's actually the same parent company. I think Walmart own Asda as well.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
So it's basically Walmart, but in the UK with a different name and probably maybe a bit smaller. But yeah, I went to an Asda at the and I looked at the headset section. They had a nice little leak from the snow the day before in the ceiling, whatever that was. And it's like, yeah, gaming headsets are £30-something. And I thought, right, yeah, I expect to pay about £30 for this, actually. But I looked around a bit and there was some other headsets and it said PC headset. And it was about £7, which is quite cheap. But I thought, hey, it's Asda, isn't it? Polar War. And so I thought, that's probably what I want, actually. Or that I can save some money here, actually. So I bought that headset. And then here I am on... you know, what was it, the night before this thing starts, you know.
The New Year show, yeah?
Yeah, something like that. And I actually open it up, take the plastic, you know, use the scissors, get rid of the plastic, and guess what I found out?
Tell me.
Well, I was hoping to buy a USB headset, you know, the USB that you just plug into.
Oh,
the
they were
USB
like the 3-pin.
Well, it's the older style, isn't it? The port, yeah, the audio jack, the ports, the, you know, that the old way of doing it, isn't it? And yeah. I thought, well, my laptop probably doesn't even have these ports on it. Let's check that. And yep, there's no ports for that on there. So there you go.
Oh, dear.
I suppose that's what cheap means then, huh? I mean, it did say PC headset. You know, I'm sure other people could have made the same mistake. You sort of just think it's going to be USB, don't you?
How much was that? What did that cost you?
It was quite cheap, though. I think it was about £7. Like, if I remember,
still expensive for a USB headset for like a.
No, it wasn't USB. It was with the.
Yeah,
the
even a thingy headset. I would say that's quite expensive. If you go to the Action here, you can pick them up for, you know, €3 or €4.
I don't know if that's I don't know if that's really expensive, but you know, generally speaking, if you buy a headset and any of these shops, as the Currys PC World or any of the stuff, you're probably talking about £30 usually for a good enough one, really. So I thought compared to that, that's actually cheaper, but then I found that doesn't have the normal USB on it.
Oh dear. Right, I'm doing the chip holder. Getting a bit tired now, actually.
But Plumble works on the Android. Plumble free, although you have to drag me into the room because I really could not connect myself. Couldn't drag myself in for some reason.
Oh, okay.
But
still, you're here now. That's the important thing.
And then, so here's a good one, actually. So yeah, I was setting up this laptop as I mentioned, I believe. So yeah, you know, you do the Windows first because that's always troubles. I'm sure you know the updates take ages, something goes wrong, possibly all that. But so yeah, new hard disk, new motherboard, put back to Windows 8.1 by the HP or their partner company, really, because I'd sent it off actually. So I did all that, upgrading it back to Windows 10, which stuck ages because, you know, it's Windows. And did the updates there again, all this stuff. And then I was like, the other night, I'm doing other stuff as well. So the other night I'm down, like, okay, I can put Linux on here now, I think. And so I'm trying to do it again on the, like, two nights or night before the New Year show, I think it was, or something like mm-hmm. that. I downloaded the Ubuntu 16.04.3 ISO. I put it onto a USB stick, a Toshiba 32GB USB stick that was meant to be new from Curry's PC World, actually. But anyway, I put it on there and I burnt it, and there were a few issues with that one or something. It didn't quite work correctly. I had to repartition. I used another USB stick. I mean, it wouldn't, it's the first one that didn't install, it didn't put everything on from the ISO properly. The second one did, but when I loaded it up, I had to use unit boot and I tried that as well, but I loaded it up and I got grub coming up from the USB stick.
Mm-hmm.
But when I try and load up Ubuntu, it's going black screen and it won't go any further, basically. I'm wondering why that is. I mean, I disabled school boot on the laptop. I'm thinking if I need to disable something else, like fast boot, or something like that, because I don't think I did that this time. I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know what my problem is quite.
Oh, hard to know. Worth a try, though.
I think it's in the past to disable fast boot as well. Well, I was looking around the BIOS, maybe I need to do that, but you know, it's annoying when you can't install Linux, isn't it? Because of some silly reason, but it used to work fine on that laptop, no problem. So I'm wondering what I'm doing wrong this time.
Yeah, it's hard to know with those BIOSes, because every computer is going to be different, you know?
Yeah, maybe it's just fast boot, but I think I'll have to try again later on, really, because, you know, I don't want to be sitting there with Windows 10 and that's it. No way. Not on that laptop. And I'm generally thinking, actually, that with my GPD Pocket, my Ultra Mini PC, one of them, whatever, that I might just actually do it now and just actually let it delete Windows and be gone with it, because...
Do you have a link for that GPD Pocket thing? Can you pop that in the show notes?
You can, well, you can buy
it. I'm soldering. If you could do that, that would be handy. Or no, you're on your phone. Okay, hold on a second. Yeah, good point. Let me see. GPD Pocket Golf Papa Delta.
Yeah, GPD Pocket. That's another device I will be setting up. And I would recommend anybody who wants a small laptop.
Those things, they are cool. I really lusted after one of those. One of the guys in work was going to buy one.
Yes, I got the GPD XD with extra space, because when I sort of crowdfunded that, I mean, they'd already sold it with less space. I got the GPD Win as well, which Windows 10 didn't last very long on that before I kind of corrupted it because of... Actually, there was a bug in the factory set, so I did a factory set and it basically corrupted it or something, and it's happened to other people as well. So the GPD Pocket, it was okay on GPD Pocket doing a factory set. I locked myself out of Windows, but I know there's a way to get around that, but I'm going to basically be taking... putting the actual GPD version of Ubuntu on 16.04 onto GP Pocket later on sometime, because they actually, when it was crowdfunded, well, I'm going to say last year now, 2017, mm-hmm. when it was funded last year, 2017, they...
Yeah, you need to say it a few times.
What's that?
The last year was 2017. This year is 2018.
Only just, but yes. So when I crowdfunded it last year, 2017, I didn't crowdfund, didn't have money to do it at the time, so I got it later on when I got some extra money. But anyway, they were crowdfunding it, giving it two options, the Windows 10 pre-installed or the Ubuntu Linux 16.04. It's a GPD version. The hardware is slightly different, so it's not a standard Ubuntu, it's slightly customized and stuff. I got, and then it said later on that they would please release all the firmware to the community for the Ubuntu and also Windows. So you could, if you got, so you could switch it over to the other one basically. And so it doesn't, so after this, they only, now they only sell the Windows version. Anywhere that anyone who anywhere that sells it only sells the Windows version.
Why is that?
I don't know. I guess they've just sort of given up on the Ubuntu one, or it's because you can put it on yourself anyway, even though you've got the one that came pre-installed Windows like mine. And also that apparently the GPD version of Ubuntu isn't as good because of how they've done it, I read somewhere. But there's also a community doing, like, there's a 17.04 version under the community. There's a 17.10 version being worked on, I believe. There's even things like Mint. There's a Mint version unofficial. There's a, I think it's Manjaro Linux, whatever it's called. Manjaro, M-A-N-J-A-R-O, yeah.
Manjaro,
it's a Narsh-based Linux distribution. There's that under the community as well. So what I'm basically going to do is when you put the Ubuntu GPD version on, it will wipe out Windows anyway. It will take up the whole hard disk, and that's that. There's no option to change that. I read somewhere, but that's fine. So I'll put that on, try that out first. You have to do it from a computer over the USB, but I'll pull it on, try it out first, and then I'll probably be like, okay, this is quite nice and this is good. But yeah, I may just upgrade to the community versions of 17.04. There's a lot of videos on YouTube, like sort of how you do it and stuff. Some very, very good YouTube videos for this device. And then apparently with community versions, you can dual boot with Windows actually. But I may or may not do that, depends. I'm just a bit frustrated with Windows again. You know, I've just been doing stuff with a laptop, things not quite going right away with the updates. I even had a weird issue where on that HP laptop, it was not logging in for a while properly. I was getting a blue screen of death. I was getting really slow, and it became okay. Oh, you know, Windows is the hassle. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I haven't run Windows for, so I've been here 15 years now.
But you have or haven't been running it?
Have not.
Because, you know, it's a hassle, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to. Yeah, I presume so. But I would probably have the same problems if I was installing BSD or Solaris or something else.
I don't know. I think generally that Linux is actually much more reliable in that sense, because Windows, you've got the issues with the updates and then the rebooting, and then it's also going to potentially get viruses a lot easier. That's a side point. Whereas, as we all know who are going to be listening to this, Linux generally works better. It's more reliable. It's more stable. It's got better performance. It just generally works better. Technically, it works a lot better. Yeah. But obviously certain programs can be lacking for it at times. It can need Windows or whatever for, but that's a side issue. What did you say?
Just soldering an LED. But all your arguments could equally be made about Windows, you know. It's, by and large, the only argument that can be made for Linux is that it's free and open source software.
Well,
you know, the counter argument can be made. Look at the heartbeat bug. Look at all the things that have come out. There's been a lot more targets on Linux recently than Windows has done an amazing amount to make their software secure in the last period of time. You can't argue with that.
Well, it might be a bit more secure now, but it's still going to get viruses easier. Although Windows isn't completely bad, or not everything, and that's actually kind of shown by something like ReactOS, when you think about it, the kind of open source version of Windows, or whatever that is meant, or, you know, it's been in alpha for so long, but you've heard of that one, haven't you?
Yes, I've interviewed them twice at Boston.
Yeah, true, they've stayed there the last 2 years. It was kind of funny though. Well, not funny, but I remember going to that stand at FOSDEM. I believe it was last year, or maybe this year. That was 2017 or 2016. Right?
Last year, either way.
yeah, or the one before, you know. And I went around there, and it's like, oh, cool, yeah, okay, RaptorOS, cool, we've got a stand and all that. Yeah, I've tried that on the Virtual Machine. I've known about that for years. And they were trying to show Microsoft Word running in RaptorOS, really, like, working properly and things like that. And they've got a laptop to test the program. And so I went onto the computer and I was like, hang on a minute, this is basically crashing straight away. And it's like, oh, let's just fix that up a bit. But yeah, I mean, it's a nice idea otherwise, because it, or it would be, if only it could run more Windows programs. It shares a lot of code with Wine apparently now, to it, or to an extent. But, you know, if it could run, if you could have, if you could run lots of Windows programs, these are in Wine and, well, not hit and miss, but I mean, just generally it works. 99, you know, most stuff just works. And the same with something like Reactor S, and I think that would be good. But neither of those things are quite there yet for that.
Yeah, but they're also always going to be chasing the moving target. So,
but exactly, they always chase a moving target as well, because it changes.
But I think the Windows Linux thing, the battle is over at this point. The war is over. There's a few battles left to fight, but essentially Linux has won for now, and then something else is coming on.
Well, it's won. You could say Linux is. I would say that Linux has won pretty much every other technical area that matters, you know, supercomputers, the servers, the robotics, the NASA, the all that kind of stuff. The mobile phone, even if you include Android underneath that, then it's definitely won the mobile phone and tablet as well, or enough so. But obviously there's that one area where it doesn't lack, and I'm sure you know what I'm about to say without even saying it, but I will say it. There's that one area where it hasn't won, for various reasons, and that is, of course, the desktop computer, the standard laptop or desktop.
Which is my point. No, I disagree. You have more Chromebooks being pushed out every year. They're all running Linux kernels. And then you are seeing that on the desktops, especially where I work, where there's quite a lot of developers, that they tend to be running either macOS or Linux. So some of them are using version of Windows, but the point is, the battleground that we have been fighting so long for, the desktop, is becoming more and more niche as time goes on. As you say yourself, you're now recording this on a mobile device. All the people who I was trying to convince my family to use various desktops or whatever, they've all switched to moving Samsung Galaxy Tabs. So they're all running Linux.
But you also have to think about that. Most of the people don't care what platform they're using. They mostly just care about the applications that they're using. Because even in the Linux world, like most of us will run anything from Ubuntu, Debian, and Arch Linux to, you know, Red Hat, RPM-based distro. They're all relatively different, and they all have their own things. Like, granted, Linux is the underlying thing, but it's all completely different the way those systems run. But most people don't care. They just want their apps to be able to get them as fast as possible and get them running. And then you have people who don't care at all what the underlying pinning is, who just want to run their apps. And those are the people who usually, they got Windows with their computer, and then they have the applications that they need or want, and then that's the end of it. No one really cares about what the underlying system is, except for us, because we care about, you know, how things get done, and we want to try to get them done the way we want them to get done. We are the niche people. But because we want to go that extra mile, learn the way computers and systems work, you know, we're the people who fight for Linux. I mean, there's no reason to. I never understood the fight for the desktop, because who cares? You know, like we're using this because it works for us. And if they want to use that and it works for them, who cares?
Well, I do care I do care when it comes to me personally, because when I went into work,
right,
and I said, guys, I would prefer to use a Linux desktop. And they said, okay, use whatever you want, so long as you can do your job. Okay, that's fine. And that's what I do. I use the Linux desktop. It doesn't affect me. If there's any problem with the software, I need to fix it, and I'll fix that on my own time if I can. So yeah, everything's hunky-dory. And the only differentiation, the arguments for running Linux versus Windows versus Mac is kind of what you're familiar with. It's your own personal preference. But the differentiation between all of them is not that they've all got a good security model or a bad security model, or the software is whatever, because you're going to have bugs in every software, every piece of software. The only differentiation between this piece of software and the other piece of software is the license under which it was released. that is the difference. And it's, and the more I think about it, the more important that becomes, that that is the differentiator. And that's all I have to say about that, really. It's, yeah.
Yeah, and I definitely can't argue against that, that's for sure. With me, it's mostly just workflow, and I really don't have the patience anymore to deal with Microsoft's licensing, which is the biggest reason why I got into Linux, is I don't want to deal with all of, like, I had no problem paying for Microsoft. I had no problem. I've purchased a Windows XP and a Windows 7 license, but 7 is where I draw the line. I bought a family license so I can put it on my mother-in-law's computer and then my wife's computer, and I've used it for helping other people out, because I'm not going to win that battle with them, so I don't even bother trying. So with me, the biggest thing, though, is it differs obviously from person to person. With you, it's the licensing. With me, it's just workflow. I've gotten to a point where I can put a set of machine up, I don't care what the back pinnings are, and put Enlightenment on it, I'm happy as a clam.
Yeah, but my point is, if you look back here, right, you're saying the reason you're doing it is workflow. I could argue with you, any number of engineers where I work, that they've got a workflow based on their operating system or based on the system that they've developed. And for them, that's as valid an argument to use Windows, as valid an argument to use Linux, or as valid an argument to use BSD. But the thing that bites them in the butt is the thing that Flat2 mentions, is where they suddenly change it. And that is at that point where the license kicks in, because it's at that point that Project X is forked off and people continue to develop and operate and whatever, and you can continue to maintain your workflow, whereas other people are then forced to adapt.
And here is a point that if I had gotten on probably at an earlier moment, I would have loved to have talked more about. And if you listen to Linux Slugcast, I've probably brought up several times. As the battle for the 32-bit, what the hell is going on that everyone's dropping support for 32-bit? Granted,
it's
just the other
epoch,
day,
the epoch is coming, the end of time.
But it's not like there's anything wrong with 32-bit. It's not like 32-bit's like broken. Why are you dropping support for 32-bit?
Because time's running out. But we need bigger numbers.
But there's still 32-bit machines out there. Why not just leave it? Leave support for it. But I did the other day find a fork of Arch Linux called Arch Linux 32. So other people are, keeping the hope alive. I don't think anybody's forked Ubuntu yet, but I'm slowly just migrating all my systems to Debian systems, because I feel like Debian is going to be reliable and keeping with 32.
My headphone fell out there a little bit, but okay, so yeah, I missed some of that, but yeah, the 32-bit thing. I mean, the old thing actually with Linux, one of the old things, a classic line would be this actually: Linux worked much better with older hardware, or Linux breathed life into older hardware. That was the classic selling line of the past, and
a bad one, if you don't mind me saying so.
Well, possibly, but that, but you know what I'm trying to say. But obviously, with the 32-bit being dropped by a lot of distros, you can understand to an extent why they want to do it. Or I mean, I can understand definitely as somebody who actually does. I said I'm not as interested in Mojave earlier, but I do actually still. I'm still on the various mailing lists, so I see various emails here and there about what's going on, the packaging and the quality assurance and all that kind of stuff. So when you follow a distro, like be it Mojave, be it Ubuntu, be it whatever, if you actually follow a distribution closely enough on its mailing list, like I've been doing with Mojave for the last years now, you know that actually there's a lot of effort, there's a lot of time, it takes a lot of people to actually make this stuff happen. So you have to package stuff, you have to support stuff, you have to do quality assurance to make sure it actually works and is okay for the public and all the rest of it. So you have to test ISOs. In the case of Mojave, I mean, they still do test all the ISOs manually. There's no automatic testing here. It's done on a small quality assurance team. Alpha 1, Alpha 2, Alpha 3, Alpha 4, all this, Alpha 1, 2, Beta 1, 2, but there's all the internal ISO testing as well, and the updates are tested. It's all tested by people manually. And so you can kind of see some of the ISOs did get dropped recently, well, last 2 years, because it's like, do we need...
Back in just 2 seconds.
Like,
all right.
slightly different example, but it was like, do we need a GNOME or a KDE in 32-bit and 64-bit now? And it was like, well, GNOME and KDE has got a bit more bloated now, so what we'll do instead is we'll drop the live CDs, but we'll have this XFCE. We can look on the ISO yourself, but that's one example. But yeah, it's got suddenly an XFCE ISO appeared into the mix instead, because that would work better with all the hardware. So that's why that was done. But what I was going to say is 32-bit and 64-bit. I think that, yeah, generally speaking, 32-bit should still be supported. I would say under Linux, because there are actually quite a lot of 32-bit machines out there still, like you just said, Hongu, whatever the name is. But on the other hand, actually, you can sort of understand why they kind of want to drop these distributions, these versions, this architecture now, because, you know, it's like, well, it's 2018 now, actually. It's, you know, nearly 2020, and it's like a lot of these old computers that really do need 32-bit are potentially going to not really be working properly in, say, 4 or 5 years. Although here's the thing, my mum's got an old laptop from 2005, which is only 32-bit, and oh yes, that runs well with Linux still. I need to update that, actually. But so it's to do with kind of the future as well, it's and the effort and the work, and it's like, if only a few people use it in 32-bit, is it worth still having ISO? Is it still worth supporting that architecture? Or if it's only just a few thousand, you know, that's the kind of debate as well. But I think because it's Linux, there will be distributions that still support 32-bit for a long time to come, regardless of all of this. Just like there are some distributions that refuse to go with the times and go with System D because they want to use the old thing. You know, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you're talking about like fork projects versus you know, major distributions that have a great deal more backing. I mean, like I said, there's an Arch Linux 32, but, you know, how long you got to basically sit there and cross your fingers and hope that this team of Arch Linux 32 are still going to keep going and keep pushing forward with their fork of the project, you know, and that's going to be true with anybody else who forks a project. You know, if I don't know, I think if more people were more vested in this, maybe they could have changed their minds or swayed or something. I don't know. I mean, maybe the major projects are going to do what they're going to do. And that's basically it.
Majia, that's what I was talking about as well. But actually, even a major project, something like, about, let's say, Kubuntu, as you know, a great prime example of what we're talking about, really. Yes, Ubuntu are now going to drop 32-bit, I read somewhere. And you might think, oh, but Ubuntu's got most of the desktop Linux users. Why are they dropping 32-bit? There's bound to be loads of people still using 32-bit Ubuntu, and there probably are. But on the other hand, Ubuntu itself, the desktop version, does not make Canonical money, really, or not enough. So they can't drop it, of course, because that's like the base of other things as well. It's like they could drop the Ubuntu phone and the Unity 8 and all that stuff, and they haven't done that. But
Ubuntu is dropping 32.
And
the fact that they're dropping it is going to mean that all of their derivatives, which is in the frickin' hundreds, I think. Well, I might be overspeaking that, but you know, the many, many derivatives are all going to have to drop it too.
Well, possibly, but I think what I'm trying to say as well is that they're dropping it probably partly, really, because making ISOs, supporting 32-bit, there's no money in that. You know, as a company, as a Canonical, there's no money for a start to just do that. And also, even as a community, that's just loads of more testing work and quality assurance and all the rest of it. And they're probably thinking, well, we're going to have to drop it at some stage. It's a bit like the old, you know, the Windows XP argument, the whole Microsoft were going to drop support in 2010, but then they decided that they would extend it by 4 years, probably because Vista hadn't taken off enough and stuff like that as well, really. But they did tell these enterprises, we're going to have to drop XP support, and we can't keep it supported forever. And that's basically the same with this 32-bit argument or any of these distribution projects. I mean, a lot of distros have closed down, There's been a lot of past distros that have closed down for various reasons, but it's not just that. But you can't. It's it makes it difficult to support the older hardware, the older things as time goes on. It can do, and that's I think as well, which is partly why they're dropping 32-bit. I think some of these.
Yeah, but the argument really... against that is they already a lot of the distros have already got 32-bit testing workflows in place that are rock solid over the years.
Right, but quality assurance testing, and like I was talking about, you have to test all this stuff. It's more work.
Yeah, but it's automated. The whole
except for Magia, but that's
yeah. But the larger distros, which are the ones who are dropping stuff, have automated test flows, don't they? OpenSUSE does.
Or partly automated, I think at least. But yeah,
I'm sure it's all compiled automated, but I'm sure they send it out to people for testing afterwards.
Yeah, and I do think I was being a bit facetious earlier on about the epoch coming in 2038, but there's still enough hardware out there, and people were supporting a lot weirder architectures for a lot longer than i32, and i32 is still around, a lot of them.
My thing is, it's still, all of my 32-bit systems still run just fine. I mean, they're like, I know they're older hardware with like 4 gigabytes of RAM and, dual core processors, like 2.5 gigahertz dual core processors. But you know what? If I'm doing mostly desktop stuff, like using the web or even just smaller stuff, like I can do audio editing on any of those machines without any problem. I'm not editing video, but I have edited video on some of my older machines. It's not granted. I was using OpenShot, and OpenShot has been kind of flaky anyways, but it still worked. I can't see a valid reason to kill them.
New and shiny. the only valid reason I see is the 2038 thing, and we could start worrying about that in another 15 years.
Right.
Well, considering all the OSs have already been patched to deal with it, so yeah.
Wait a minute. Hang on. Have I missed something here? What's the 2038 thing?
The Unix counts up every second since the 1st of January 1970 UTC is epoch. So that's how Unix keeps its time. At a particular point, that's a 32-bit integer, and that overflows. And that will happen. On 3:14:07 in the morning of the 19th of January 2038, which is a Tuesday.
What Unix will it won't like it? Is that you saying that's a spike?
Well, it'll go back to 1970, like everything does. So if you ever see a file date with 1970:01:01. That's what happened. The date hasn't been set. So basically, if you have a Raspberry Pi that doesn't have an internet connection, everything gets 1970. Well, I don't know if Raspberry Pi does do the duty. But yeah, they don't have a real time clock. So, yeah.
Okay, real time. Right. Okay, fine. Yeah. But, okay, so if you chain one of these devices yourself to that date, it's going to go back to 1970 and it's going to be stuck there, is it?
Well, it can't deal with anything bigger than 1970. That's the point. The firmware on the machine is only capable of dealing with a number. And once that number reaches the end, it'll add a 1, and then it'll go back to 0000001234. Remember the Y2K mess?
Yeah, I was just thinking similar to that, but with a valid reason. Yeah.
In this case, it's a valid reason, and we've got 38 years to deal with it, or less. But 38 minus 17, 18 now, which makes it a lot easier. We've got 20 years to deal with it. All the OS's operating systems have already been patched, but it's at that point that the 32-bit chips become less useful. Not unusable, it's just anything related to time, keeping track of time related to years would be an issue. Keeping track of time related to time since that button has been pressed should not be a problem.
Ah, do you mean the chip itself? So the hardware will kind of run out, its
correct.
Internal
yes,
clock or
exactly.
whatever.
That's it.
Yeah. And then you can't reset that clock because it'll be stuck back on 1970, and that's it, basically.
Well, you can set it from any time between 1970 up until the 19th of January 2023. That's not a problem. But anything outside of that could be a problem. You could always do the Microsoft hack on it and say, well, if it's closer to 19, split the difference. If it's switch everything around the year 2000 and say, well, if it's the year 2000, then I'll I'll fudge it by adding so many days. But that doesn't actually matter. The point is, if you look at an 8-bit, if you look at 8-bit computers now, they're still in use. They still have a valid use. It's just not, they're not maintaining date codes related to this is the year. Or if they are, then you set it and it just goes, right, since I was turned on, I have started counting numbers. And you tell me that I need to add so many numbers to this date. So you say it is the 1st of January 2018, and I've been turned on, and you set the date to the 1st of January 2018. Okay, and now start counting. And then you will be happily able to count another 68 years without there being a problem. I feel like I'm not explaining this correctly.
I think I sort of understand, but yeah, and there's an internal clock in a lot of these things, and yeah, when you like, if you take your battery,
yeah, well, what happens to your you have a clock on the wall with hands on it, yeah?
Yeah, well, yeah, I got clocks here as well. Okay. Got clocks.
No, I'm just asking, do you have an analog clock on the wall at this minute? So what happens?
I got
11:55 a.m. 5 minutes later, the clock has run out. Yeah, what do we do? So the clock resets.
It goes back to, resets. Yeah.
It starts resetting to 12 again.
Yeah.
So we in our brains automatically adjust and we go, the sun is out. So it's 12 in the afternoon. So 12:01 means that's what the time is. Yeah. The problem is, if you've got a digital clock that doesn't have AM or PM on it and it says 12, you've got to ask yourself, does this clock do AM or PM? If it's 11:55, we don't know what's going to happen on that clock. This is because it's 11, you know, is it capable of displaying 12 up to 24 or 23.99? 24, let's be honest. You don't actually know what's going to happen. So with a 32-bit processor or 32-bit chip, it's only capable of counting up time to, say, midday, yeah? And then at that point...
I'm using an analogy here, but you sort of mean, in this case, if the clock can actually show the 0000 with like midnight, or if it can't show that because it's going to go straight back to,
so at 11:59:59 there's no problem, yeah, on your display.
At
12:00 on your analog clock, it resets back to 12 hours before, because it can only display 12 hours of information. Same thing happens with the chips. They're counting from a particular point in time. Now, if you have a stopwatch that can only display 12 hours, yeah, that doesn't matter because somebody's running around the track there, yeah, and you press the button and it starts counting. That doesn't matter. So you can, regardless of what time of the day it is, you can still track that person running around the track, yeah, because you've got a stopwatch. Yeah. You with me? So they've backed. So long as that person doesn't run around the track longer than 12 hours, which is unlikely to happen, yeah, then you can happily continue to use stopwatches that can only display 12 hours of information. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, now these clocks, the 32-bit ones, can only count to a number up to, what is the next decimal number is 21, big number. A 32-bit integer is assigned 32-bit integer. Why they did assigned one is beyond me.
Not to interrupt you, but I just wanted to. I'm hearing a lot of screaming upstairs, so I'm going to have to go back upstairs. I just want to say Happy New Year to everybody. Thank you for everything. Thank you for everybody's help this year.
Thanks, Hunky, for putting this together. It's awesome. Well done, you.
I just love doing it, and I love. I didn't get on this year as much as I would like to, but I love doing this every year. So, thank you for everybody.
I love it a lot more since you started taking over.
But the clock won't be able to show a particular hour or whatever after the last bit.
Okay, so, which is a problem.
So it has to reset back. In this case, it's not just a time; it's a year as well. So it's going to go all the way back to 1970. Which
exactly
I was saying, but that's what happens also when you you've got a battery that kind of you take out.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why it does that.
Something.
And that's exactly why it does that. Yeah, but that's a problem. So Honky's point is we have another 20 years useful life. So these 32-bit chips can continue to operate for another 20 years without it being a problem. Yeah. And even after that, they can still continue to operate because so long as you don't care that it's 1970, what does it matter? You know, if your email comes in and it's 1971, you know that it is 2036 plus a few days. And you can always set the clock.
Yeah, yeah.
You can always reset the clock, possibly. You'll probably be able to do a hack where after that time, you could reset the clock that'll display correctly because you go, yeah, take into account they flip over, which is exactly what happens on all the XP machines or Windows 95 machines, is that they said, okay, yeah, after this time, we're just going to, if the number flips over, then you just add 50 to it and then you're done. Yep. So you may not be able to use them as easily for doing a clock, but you can still use those chips for doing stopwatches, for instance, to use my analogy.
Yeah, it won't show the time properly unless you do a hack call, whatever, or you don't care anyway because it's 1971. I understand that, but so the argument is basically it's going to work properly until another 20 years or so anyway. So in that case, let's keep 32-bit Linux going for another 20 years. That's the argument, wasn't
it? Yeah, that's the argument. It is a little bit premature, but then, you know, you notice here with Linux is that things go out of favor. There will be a few people who will maintain something, and then later on something happens whereby suddenly it's really important that the code that those few stragglers on are maintaining suddenly becomes really important. Like, for instance, the ARM people who have been maintaining ARM, or that all these small programs that have been running have made the Raspberry Pi possible because XFCE still exists, and people go, no, we still have graphics processors and we're switching to massive desktops. And but these guys kept churning away and keep maintaining their products, maintaining their projects, I mean to say. And then all of a sudden a whole industry develops as a result of it. So yeah, what goes around comes around, guys. That is one thing that I've learned in this short life of mine.
Well, yeah, some of the old stuff is still going, definitely. And then sometimes it ends up getting used in something else, something modern in a way, really. But, you know, well, it's modern, but it's using old tech inside of it. That's true.
Yeah, exactly.
That can happen.
Well, it happens all the time. That's what's happening in your Android. That's what's happening in Arduino. That's what's happening in Raspberry Pis. That's what's happening in routers.
Well, yeah, they take things, they've taken old software, put it together, and all the rest of it.
Yeah, but the point is, it's not old software. It is maintained software from an unpopular... It's software that's become unpopular. Like, the 32-bit stuff is not old software. It's as new software as the 64-bit stuff. It's just, it's not as popular. It's not maintained, or it wasn't as maintained. So these guys choose to maintain it. It is still... You can still go out and get a brand spanking new 32-bit operating system, and you can take the source code from the Linux kernel and all the other software, and you can still compile it for a 32-bit system. It's exactly new.
Well, yeah, of course you can, because it's, yeah, Linux. But yeah, it's like Mate is still around, or that's the GNOME 2 living on, and various things that are still around getting maintained. The Ubuntu Touch and the UE ports, that's like a different thing, but, you know.
So I'm now putting on terminal blocks on this thing. They're a bit askew, but I'm not going to worry about that. That felt a little bit like a lecture. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
Just tell me to shut up. Lots of people do.
But I'll ask one question, though, because you were like, in my short life, how old are you anyway?
I have 49 now. 49 physically, 27 in my brain.
Right, okay.
And I've, 27 in my brain. It's kind of the ideal age. You're old enough to be taken seriously, and you're young enough to still be young. Yeah. And I'm still get excited with cool stuff. That's the key.
Such as?
This. Soldering stuff. Talking to you. This is cool stuff. Don't you think this is cool stuff? Like, we're living in the future, seriously.
Talking to me might not be so cool, but...
No. Well, don't put yourself down, dude. It's always a pleasure.
The future. We're living in the present, and actually, yeah, I mean, if you go back to sort of the 90s, if you go back in a time machine and sort of be like somebody, right, actually, go and watch the new Jumanji, that's a good point. Go seriously, take your kids and watch the new Jumanji if you haven't seen it, because there's a great bit there with the mobile, what?
No, they find it too scary.
Maybe
They find the Lego movie too scary, so yeah.
But anyway, watch it yourself or whatever. But it's a good bit there where there's like a bit of mobile phones because he's like goes back in because he's well, don't want to ruin it for somebody to hasn't seen it or whatever. They might be listening to this later on. So I'll say is there's a line that's like, oh, mobile phones. Is that something different in the future? And yeah, it'll make sense what I mean if you watch it or whatever. But yeah. So cool. Yeah, mobile phones were these big whatever in the past, in the 90s and so on. And now look at it. It's smartphones all over the place. It's people are basically addicted. Like somebody said here earlier on HPR on the new issue, people are addicted to these mobile phones a bit like drugs in a way. Or it would be drugs basically if it was, you know. And yeah, mobile phones are so, it's such a big thing now compared to what it was.
Yeah, exactly. I remember, I remember when having the first mobile phone and lots of people saying, oh, what would you be doing? You'd never be on the internet like that. And now they're completely WhatsApping and I'm the one who is not on the internet as much as them. But every year we go and stay in a historical village, historical reenactment village, and you can go as a guest and stay in the, they have a medieval area and you can stay up there. And last year I happened to be just working with a smith sitting there just listening. Basically it's, you know, three-dimensional YouTube, because if I'm at home I'd be watching forging films on YouTube anyway. But one of the guys was going, yeah, but it's we have it so busy now. And the guy was going, no you don't, like they had it a lot harder. We have never had a time where we have been more free time, less things to worry about, because we've got food on demand, we've got health, we've got shelter, we've got warmth. It's just an amazing time that we live in, and probably should remember that from time to time.
Well, it is to some extent. There are a lot of problems still, world problems and that. But
yes, they are. But remember that a lot of these problems, big though they are, and they are, don't get me wrong, there's fucking lots of stuff that we could be doing better. Sorry for effing there. And I do tend to get a bit down about it myself, but it's still a very, very fortunate time to be living in. Yes, we could be cutting down on the carbon. Yes, don't get me started politically on all the stuff that we could improve. But when people say, oh, this is really a very difficult time that we're living in. Yes, it is. But additionally, you're not depending on whether it's going to rain tomorrow to determine whether your crops are going to fail and whether you're going to be able to feed your kids for the next 12 months. It's just a completely different different kettle of fish here in the first world. I mean, admittedly, in other parts of the world, these are serious concerns to people.
Well, yeah, and the homeless issue, even in the developed world, in various cities and various things. But what I wanted to say as well is we're talking about the time and sort of like, oh, it's a great time now. And I've been thinking about this myself here and there, you know, more recently as well. It's like the internet. You know, I mean, here we are on a podcast. You're in Holland, I'm in the UK, and we've had our American people on and all the rest of it. And, you know, if you go back to before the internet and so on, and probably before phones a bit, even before they kind of taken off as well, but, you know, it would be such a big thing. Oh, you can suddenly talk to somebody across the other side of the Atlantic. Wow,
exactly.
Amazing. And now it's like, it's just no big, it's like it's not a big deal because we just got this internet thing, and it's just like, you know, IRC or instant messaging, email, or a pod, or this voice stuff or whatever, or webcams even, you know, you can just do it now on the internet, and people just kind of take it for granted now, and for the most part, you don't really, you know, think that much of it now. It's just like, yeah, I can talk to somebody from America. Oh, I can go on a webcam. I can talk to them in text. I can email them, and you know, but, and that's the time we're in now. And also, even the whole internet in itself. I mean, if you go back to when the early, you know, the noughties, the early 2000s, the end of the 90s, and all that, when the web was only kind of just hitting off. We've got dial up and all the rest of it. Now we've got really fast connection as a side point, but now it's the websites. You just go to Wikipedia, and they annoy you and ask you to donate and stuff, and like emails telling me to donate still because I donated once. But that's a side thing. But you know, you sort of take the web pages for interest for granted now. You can just go on websites, and it's not quite as fun as it once was, really. And online gaming possibly as well. It's like, I don't really do that, but again, you can just play games with people online and stuff. Whereas in the 90s, it would have been more like, oh, dial up connection. Oh, also, oh, if I want to host a game, I need to disable my hardware firewall and open my ports up, or they can't connect to me. And now it's just done better. And, you know, signs have changed a lot in the last 20 years or so in that sense. And it's amazing, really. And if we could, you know, if we could live forever or for much longer, you know, then whatever, you know, we'd see so much change probably over the years as well. More so than we're going to ever see, but, you know.
It's gas. I was in the hardware store the other day, and a lady walks in and puts the phone down on the counter, and then some guy starts talking to the shop owner and showing them the exact thing, the problem that they were having, and the shopkeeper was able to find the part based on, you know, somebody with a camera pointing at the actual physical thing. And, you know, that's just normal now. It's gas.
Yeah, I guess. Oh, and actually, I've decided, well, there's a little helping the older people with their computers or tablets group, which a thing on Thursday morning that I've been going to at times recently because of where I live now and stuff. And even there, it kind of shows that the times are sort of changed or have changed, because even the like 40 plus, a lot of the old, you know, 40 plus and pensioners and all the rest of it, they are
40 plus is old. Thank you.
No, I said 40 plus first because it's a 40 plus group. That's what I meant. Anybody sort of 40 or over. I should have been more clear. But I'm trying to say that the even older people, the pensioners as well, and all that, you know, are a lot of them actually using tablets and smartphones these days as well. Some of them more so comfy than others, but it's showing that even there, that things are becoming more relaxed, I guess.
Ubiquitous,
more, you know, more like it's just a thing and it's people do it. And you think, I've thought about this as well. So the people who are like, you know, 20s and 30s and, well, teenagers and even kids now with all the smartphones, all the rest of it, it's like, what are we going to all be using in, say, when we're like, pensioners or whatever, you know, it's like what all these devices and stuff that we're going to be using, you know, it's like can misimagine that. I don't think about flying cars quite, but you know,
yes, we do. They're called helicopters. I don't understand why people don't get this. They're called helicopters.
Well,
it's a car. You sit in there and you drive it. Yeah, it's just hard to drive and very expensive, but it is a flying car.
But anyway, I meant like tablets, phones, and all this kind of stuff. It's like, what are we going to have in the future? When we are 70 or whatever, what, you know, what's going to be there?
Yeah, good question. I hope there is a future. Yeah, dinner's ready. Oh, okay. I'm going to have to pause this for a while. I'll be back. See you later.
Yes.
See you next year. Happy New Year if you're gone.
Well, I'll probably leave it on, but I think people are mostly gone at the moment.
Okay, bye.
But we'll see if we chat or not later, but if not, or whatever, Happy New Year, yeah.
You too, cool. And I hope to meet up at one of the events maybe this year.
Maybe the one in Bristol or the Dog Camp possibly, or there's...
Perhaps, yeah. Let's have a look.
You're not doing Brussels, so...
No, I won't, no. Not this time. Okay, talk to you later, bye.
Yeah, bye. Bye. Actually, yeah, is anybody just happened to be listening to this that is around? I guess not. Okay, Happy New Year 2018, everyone. Gotnit or 20... actually, Swedish, yes. Thinking, okay. I speak Swedish, so let's get this year right. Gotnit or 2018. That's what it is in Swedish. Allihopa, which is everyone. Now the after show is pretty much over, I think. What's after show in Swedish? Oh, I'm not sure. After show. Oh, anyway, new after show when över jag tror. Now the after show is over, I think. Or pretty much. With no Casper, or somebody like that to play some ending guitar music, which I will have to listen to on the actual Acca Public Radio New Year's show when it comes up, because there's been bits here and there that I heard and then didn't hear, and that'll be good. So yeah, some people think it is fun to chat to themselves on a podcast, which they assume will be probably go up as well as part of something. However, actually, this is not as particularly fun, and that is why for that reason as well, I'm going to stop doing this now. Although did I say talking to myself? Because actually I'm talking to you, whoever may end up actually listening to this, if anyone actually will.
Right, I'm back. Now I have to put it in the LCD screen, the potentiometer, the power feed, the actual clamp for the components, and the header for the screen.
I thought it was over pretty much, but maybe not then.
Good God, no. This, I'm not stopping until this transistor tester is put together. Important differentiation there for people listening. Put together is different from working. This thing is going to work.
Good morning from
She has a question. Have I got my headset? My phone's in or not right now?
Who was that? Who just joined?
Claudio M. It just went a little bit ago. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year, Claudio.
Have I got my phones in or not, Ken? That's the question.
I don't know. So how's life, Claudio?
No, you don't.
So far, so good. It's funny, we rang in the new year. I noticed that the time was going by real fast. I was like, it's already 1 hour past 2018. 2018's flying by like, I can't believe.
So you were on the show last night, obviously.
Say it again?
You were on the show last night then, I guess.
Yeah, I was on for a little bit just to wish everyone a happy new year. We had my dad come over, and it was just basically the small family get together and rang in the new year, and then danced a bit. We turned on some music, and then we turned in for the night.
Nice, cool. So when is Link's Basement coming back?
You'd have to ask Chad about that one.
When are you forking off your own show? The Claudio M show.
Well, one of my New Year's resolutions is to finally get my butt back on track to recording episodes for HPR.
Oh, you tease.
Yes, I do, but I'm looking to make good on my promise.
There you go, Seth. Somebody sending in shows, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. I've got the rest of this week off as well before school starts up again, so I'll have some time. Right now, I'm just waiting for the coffee to finish brewing, and I'm going to go ahead and enjoy a nice, warm, hot cup of coffee with my wife, enjoy 2018.
Good. Your audio is chopping in and out, at least for me, just as a by-the-by. And I am currently in the process of assembling, for the last, essentially, 48 hours, a transistor tester PCB. The one that NY Bill suggested I should put together. So I will continue on being here until this is done. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you if you finished that, actually.
And, no, as no far stop bugging me.
No, I just figured you were working hard on that one, so I had to ask. And as far as the choppiness, you can thank Comcast.
Why are Comcast to blame for that?
Just because.
Wow, that's not good.
No, I hear it all the time from my kids, so I might as well join in the fun.
So what type and how old are they? I'm sure I heard before about
they that. Are all boys. They're all boys. My eldest is 16. He should be graduating. He's actually going to graduate a year early from high school, so he'll be graduating this year. My middle one is 13. And my youngest will be 11 towards the end of this month.
Cool.
And my stepson, who's the eldest of them all, yeah. He is 19.
No, mine aren't approaching that yet.
Yeah, every so often I'll come across old pictures of my sons, and yeah, I get all nostalgic.
Yeah, I like drives my daughter crazy when I say, "You're this big," you know, to rub my hand over, you know, when they were on my shoulder and stuff. "You'll always be this big to me."
Yeah, that's pretty much how it is.
Small and big at the same time. It's amazing. Amazing thing of fatherhood. I don't think there's enough meta out of the fact how important a thing it is, especially for me. I've always felt that it's an amazingly fulfilling thing just being a father.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, there are loads of... Well, I always thought there were very few good songs about being a father. And those that there were a little bit cringy, like "Hey Jude" and stuff.
Yeah, it is true. For some reason, I don't know why, but I always think they're like country songs.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but nothing wrong with country songs, but just that style.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, my wife loves country. My youngest likes country, and, you know, I'll listen to them then.
So I have to ask, because Klaatu is not here, what type of coffee have we got?
Oh, he would cringe at what I got. It's not instant, so at least it's that. That's a good thing.
Although, this is the guy who just commented on the show saying that he misses gas station coffee.
No gas station coffee for me. I'll do McDonald's coffee, but I think that's as far as I'll go.
And to be honest, taking it out of context, which I'd never do, he was referring to the nostalgia aspect as opposed to anything else, I guess.
Yeah, the coffee I'm having right now is pretty much supermarket brand coffee, brand X, I guess, if you want to consider that. It's actually not too bad. It does the job.
Yeah, I'm partial to brand X myself. I have a cup of brand X right in front of me.
And speaking of which, coffee's ready, so I'm going to go ahead and take it in.
Alrighty.
And hope you guys have a good time here recording, and happy 2018.
Yeah, same to you. Say hi to all the family.
Likewise. Bye-bye.
Cheerio. Okay, now I've got the power cord, a 9-volt battery adapter, and a... can't remember what those connectors are called. Anyway, power connector. Ooh, it's getting exciting now. Just the potentiometer, the component holder, and the screen to go on. Going to do the component holder, I think, yeah. And I'm using a Julian Elect tip for doing this, and that is use blue tack, or white tack as the case may be, to hold the component while you solder it on the other side, which is kind of cool. It also stops the thing from rotating around the place. And I'm using an NY Build tip to put my project into a project box, which has got lots of little components. So I've had all the resistors in various different pockets. And then I put blue tack on the top, put the PCB on it, and I can just attach the PCB and then move the case itself around. So that's what I'm doing. It's kind of cool. This is immensely satisfying, I must say. I hope it'll actually work at the end. Seb, have you gone? Could be getting coffee as well. Let's see. These component holder thing pins are absolutely slurping up solder. Clean my tip every so often. And as Mr. X says, apply heat to the base, apply solder to the component, withdraw solder, withdraw iron. Actually, I should put a link to the show notes of that episode. Hold on. Funny now, all the top links for HBR is coming up as archive.org. Probably because Google is downplaying the SSL stuff. So anyway, need to work on that, make sure that the website is up and running in SSL as well. Okay, HTTPS, TLS, fine. That was on the 24th of the 7th, 2012. Wow, that's a while back. Just goes to show how long it takes me to get around to something. Okay, that's that in, and now I'm putting in the potentiometer. Some pin alignment has been required. Just spent 10 seconds there trying to figure out why my soldering wasn't working, and then realized I turned off my soldering iron. Okay, that is the potentiometer in. All that is left now is the screen. Before I do that, I'm putting on some little risers that are there. They act as little feet, keeping the thing off your desk, the PCB, from shorting on your desk. Let me sure none of them shorts anything out. It looks very close. Yeah, it's close to the end of one of the resistors at the top right-hand corner. So now, there are two risers from the PCB, and there's a male and female headers. So if I assemble the screen on there, I should be able to fix it to the PCB with the headers. Yeah, they're all over there. And then I'll just screw in the PCB and then solder it up and we're done. I'm not going to screw them fully yet because I'm going to leave some slack for the screen to settle. Exciting stuff. Right, is that it? Is it done? Okay, tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Backup Public Radio. No, I won't do that to you. I'll turn it on and see what happens. Right, that was an enjoyable experience, putting this together. However, now I need to plug it in. And absolutely nothing happened. Ah! It's not working. And then my bill will go, great, now I can go troubleshooting, but now I'm going, no, I just want the effing thing to work. Nope, nothing, nada, dilly squat. What have you done wrong? Yeah. I'll check on the back here to see if there's any obvious things gone wrong.
Okay, who's here?
Hey, this is Mongo.
Hi, Mongo.
And we've got three, including ourselves.
Yeah, I just woke up and got a cup of coffee.
What time is it there?
I'm in Texas. This is 8:45.
So you got to bed quite early, didn't you?
Well, after last night, yeah, I guess it's early. I normally wake up a little earlier than this. Ken, I heard you mumbling. You still working on that thing?
Yeah, I finished it, but it doesn't work.
It's that bad solder joint you were talking about last night.
There's been a few more of them since then.
What's this thing supposed to do? Is it supposed to test just almost everything?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Is it supposed to, like, actually give you a value for resistors and capacitors and things?
Yep, and we'll tell you what a transistor is, or diode, or DIAC, or whatever. So, I am actually in dire need of one, but, you know, it's a bit disappointing, to say the least. And I know, and my bill goes, this is great, because now you can go troubleshoot. Yeah, well, that assumes that you know what you can troubleshoot.
No. You don't want to troubleshoot. You want it to work when you get it finished.
Exactly. That is exactly it, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense at all. Especially test equipment, you don't want to have to troubleshoot.
I don't even know where to begin to troubleshoot, to be honest.
Does it do anything at all?
Nope, because it could also be a dodgy screen, you know? So.
Screen. Has this thing got logic? It talks to you?
It's got an Atmel in it. It's a Arduino based device.
Oh, wow. That's
yes indeedy.
That means it's got a post or something when you power it up and doesn't even do that?
Nothing.
Well, I guess that's the place to start, that you're either this computer doesn't come up or the screen's bad.
Well, can I check either of those things? Now I've got a big pile of do on my hand. Yeah. #disappointed. Be nice now if there was just something very obvious that I was missing. Plug it in and trace the voltages, I guess.
I don't know about voltages. I mean, if it's the screen's not there, that's the kind of thing you replace. What is this saying to have, is it HDMI or something that you can just plug in a different screen?
No, there's a link in the show notes to a guy putting the same video in, and it's a little onboard screen type thing with 8 pins on it. Could check and see if there's any current going over there when I do plug it in. That'd be a thing, I guess.
Yeah, and you can check voltages. I mean, voltages aren't that hard to check, but then you got to do your find your pins and figure out how to get your little contacts in there and things like that. So on a lot of little stuff, it's easier if you can plug in a different component that does the same thing. That
I don't have that option right now.
Yeah, that's what you have to have.
Okay, I'm just looking at the PCB design. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7. 7 also goes to 8. 8 goes to ground. So presumably, pin 1 goes to ground via 22K resistor. So presumably, if there's voltage getting that far, if there's current getting that far, or voltage, there's power getting that far, then if I leave it on the first pin and then go to the next and the next and the next, maybe something. Well, let's just see, shall we?
Yeah, I suppose you could measure voltage across that resistor. While you're doing that, I'd like to tell you how much I appreciate what you do for HPR. One of the things I enjoy most, I've probably listened to 1 or 2 episodes per week. And then after I listen to y'all do the monthly roundup, and you make enough of them sound interesting that I end up having to go back and listen to. I take notes while y'all are talking, and I go back and say, oh, wait a minute, is that what that is? That title didn't work for me. And I go back and I enjoy, you know, another 4 or 5 shows that way.
That is actually great to hear. I was hoping people would do that. That's kind of the point of the show. Cool. Not good to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, y'all are just kind of talking about them, but you obviously listen to and take in every single show. And
yeah, it's not that hard to do. Not when you've got a 3-hour commute every day.
Oh, my gosh.
Right, there is zero current going anywhere on that header for the screen. So I guess, therefore, that it can't be the screen, which is actually good. Because I have some chance of having the other components. Okay, well.
Yeah, that actually probably does make it a little easier.
Yeah. Okay. No, in my bill, I still don't think this is fun.
No, you're right. I agree with you completely. I used to do component level repair of things back, you know, very long time ago when people actually did that. And no, it's not that much fun.
Okay, so there's no current going through there. There's nothing getting to the screen. So what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Let me see. Well, I'll just trace it down, I guess. Can you read a PCB then?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a link to the PCB in the show notes there. I can throw it into Mumble.
Oh, okay. I'll just run and get my multimeter.
Are you kidding me? I'll paste it into the Mumble chat. So there she goes. Actually, hold on, let me I rotated it by 90 degrees myself, just made it life a little bit easier. So current comes in there, goes up there, goes to a transistor, a 9012. The thing about ones that goes to a transistor, I have no idea if there should be current coming out of the transistor or not. Should I be
did you
using,
pop
did it what?
I said, did you populate that entire board, or is this the board that you started with and it already was a computer?
This is what I started with. I scanned this physical thing. It is this physical device. And the back of it, I have mirrored 90 degree, or I just flipped it over so that the traces on the back match up with the top.
Yeah, so, I used to do that kind of stuff. My degree was in computer hardware, and back 40 years ago, more than 40 years ago, and we actually had projects like that in classes, or because the idea was to learn how to fix computers, and so we had to start by building things from circuit boards and stuff.
Wow. Yes. Okay. So let me see. Where is this? That is that side. So this is this side. What's best, a continuity tester or a voltage meter? I don't even know what the tools I have right now are. A voltmeter or a DVM.
and I have a bitwise scope, but I have no idea how to use that either. Do I just solder some stuff and hope it'll work?
Is your voltmeter it's a digital voltmeter?
Yeah, DVM. I can do volts, amps, and that sort of thing. Resistance, and I've got a continuity tester on it as well.
Do you have something to check diodes or transistors with? Will the DVM do that? Or, I mean, can you put it on, like the old meters, no, you could
that's
check?
That's what I was hoping this thing would do. Oh, hold on, maybe I have a crappy meter that might do that. Hold on one second. Yes, as it happens, I've got a cheap meter that's got a resistor checker, which would have been handy to do before I soldered them and put them in.
Yeah, checking components while they're in circuit, you have to look at your circuit and see what are the other paths for that electricity to come back to your meter, so you don't, oh wait, this is great, it's working, and it's not going through your component, instead it's going around a different path, and that's the problem with that.
Yeah, but it could even be the Arduino chip not working.
I would say start with the assumption that the components themselves are working, and go back and check that you've got, that everything is there. Since this is a first time, this is the did it ever work or is it broken test. And since this one hasn't worked, that would be the first thing I would do, is don't assume I've got a bad component. So try to find that out now that it's in soldered in. Instead, go back and check your work. And that's really just a visual.
And if some of the solder joints look dodgy, just touch them up?
Yeah, if possible, you can test them electrically. I've always found that the ugly solder joints are probably not good for the very low voltages that you get. And I mean, probably low currents rather than voltages, but the very low currents that you get in this type of circuit, it doesn't take much of anything for it to not work. Do you use any kind of a flux or anything on your solder to make it flow?
Yeah, it has the flux core, and for some of them I used flux to make it flow down.
Yeah, I find the flux core doesn't help a lot, because you end up having to melt an inch of solder to get enough to really clean a joint, so you're better off touching a tiny bit of actual. So I always keep a can of flux and touch that up, and that way you don't need to put too much solder.
Yeah. Well, it's a little late now. Ah, this is annoying.
It's also possible, I heard you talking about using the surface mount things. Those are some of those are just very, very delicate. It's not impossible to destroy them with your solder if you're getting them too hot because you're having problems with the solder, so you just keep messing with it. You can destroy a diode or transistor.
Yeah, I've definitely done that though. That was there for ages trying to get it right.
Yeah, that is a danger with messing with them, unless you let the component cool back down before you mess with it again.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put this into a plastic bag and send it to NY Bill and say, okay, smartass, you get it working.
That sounds good.
You enjoy it so much. I'm just going to go out and buy a new one, because I did enjoy the through-hole components, but the surface mount stuff was not fun. Would have been fun if it had just turned on and worked. But alas, pindacast.
Yeah, surface mount stuff is not for people to solder. I've never actually done any, except once or twice doing some things a long time ago. But, like you said, the through-hole stuff, that's not hard to do.
Well, I'm afraid I spent enough time at it now today, so I'm going to have to go do some stuff with the kids and stuff. So that's that, alas.
Well, that sounds like a start the new year off right.
Start the new year off with a massive big fail?
No. I mean, with the family, being a, this year I'm going to be a good father.
Oh, thanks very much, yeah.
I woke up this morning still plugged into this thing, and I was like, what? Huh? And, I don't actually remember what time we stopped talking last night. Well, when I stopped talking and came to bed.
Guys, I'm going to have to go back and listen to the show because, I'm just going to try plugging in some another power supply. There's two ways of powering this thing, so. Let's try that.
I remember when I came off last night or this morning. I don't remember quite falling asleep though, but yeah.
Well, I guess it's probably time for me to get up and walk around and see if anything's going on too. All I did was go to the kitchen for coffee, so I guess I'll call it a date myself.
Yeah, this is over really, I think, but unless something pops up, but whatever, yeah.
Yep. On the power supply, I'll try that. Keep turning up the power until it starts working.
I remember when I was in the Army, I fixed electronic equipment, and there was a guy that we had a tape recorder that came in to be repaired, and it was blowing fuses. So one of the other technicians, not me, put a Phillips head screwdriver in the fuse holder and just turned on the power.
Ouch.
And watched the smoke. And then when it stopped smoking, he just unplugged it and then replaced everything that was burned up. He had lots of patience. It was, I guess, troubleshooting wasn't his strong point, but he could replace things, so that's what he did. It actually worked. Okay. He got it working. He just ended up replacing a lot of the components and pretty much all the wiring.
Wow. Okay.
I'd not recommend it for your device, though. I'm not sure that actually works. This is not a solid-state piece of equipment. This is an old... my experiences with that kind of stuff, a lot of it included vacuum tubes.
Yeah, that's a lot more resilience, too.
So even though I did train on repairing computers, I never actually got around to doing that in my career. So it's funny how you go to college and learn to do stuff, and then you start looking for a job and you end up with something different. And so I wrote software for, ended up writing software for about 6 or 7 years, and then basically a server administrator for the rest of my career.
Well, I did more or less the same. Started as a mechanical engineer and then got out as quickly as possible. No, that didn't work either. Right, I'm going to just leave it now for now and take a break. Maybe come back. I'll get an inspiration.
Well, good luck and Happy New Year. I guess I'll check out too.
Okay, let's call it a halt, guys.
You have been listening to the Hacker Public Radio 6th Annual 24-Hour Plus Show.
And seriously, thanks to everybody who took the time to join. And thank you all for listening. And thanks everybody who who did out the show notes. That is absolutely awesome. They look a lot better than they normally do.
And it was fun again. Or was it? Being on this or listening to it?
I am gathering all the chat logs, so I'm kind of busy doing stuff. 1 second. So yes, thanks to everybody for joining, and thank you to Taj and Hunky Magoo for the Etherpad, K5 Tux for doing the Etherpad restore and all that stuff, Kevin Wisher and Chris Fish for the stream. And thank you all. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of This Is Where You Go Hacker. Hacker Public Radio. Should we call it a day? She's gone.
I think, what you mean, close the whole lockdown recordings and everything. Are you still there? And yeah, thank you to whoever for making this happen. Thank you to whoever for making this happen again. Closing. I'm going to close this down. I think, yeah. If anybody turns up on this later on, I will. Because all this stuff is over and really now. Bye-bye.
Ken, are you still there?
Yes, I got it working. Actually, no, I didn't. Anyway, thank you, everybody. That's it. It is now 16:15 on the 1st of January 2018. Happy New Year to everybody, and thank you very much for everybody for joining. That's it. It's officially over.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.